Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the April 28th session of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. To lead the pledge this evening, we have Robert Davis from the Citizens Bicycle Committee.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, announcements. First thing I'm going to announce is we have a new system for timing people's comments. It's very difficult to sit up here and have to interrupt somebody when they're in the middle of speaking. Last week I had to do it to somebody making a presentation, and I had to do it to an Eagle Scout. It's not fun, it's not pleasant, and it makes for hard feelings on both sides of the table. So we now have a little box up on the speaker's podium, and when it is your time to speak, there's a green light that will go on. When you get down to 30 seconds, there's a yellow light that will go on. When you get down to 3 minutes, there will be a red light and a beep. And 5 seconds after that, the microphone will cease to work. Okay? That way, I don't have to do it. There we go. Okay. So, hopefully that will solve the problem of not having to interrupt people anymore. Other announcements. Let's see. We had a wonderful kite festival this weekend, and I have to say I was one of the people who was lucky enough to go out to the schools and help the kids learn how to fly kites with a professional kite flyer. And it was fabulous. I went to Del Mar, and there was 300 kids with their kites in the sky, and it was just a beautiful day. It was a lot of fun. We had a lovely parade. I want to thank the organizers of that. I don't have all their names, so I'm not going to try. And I think that's all I have. Betty?
A couple of things. One, at the Water Resources Advisory Committee this past month, we talked about the mussel invasion on freshwater bodies in the state of California. It's already come into Nevada, as some of you boaters may know. It doesn't affect saltwater, but it's a very serious type of microscopic invasion. And once it's in, you're probably about 10, 15 minutes long, and I'll be agendizing it to put on because following that, then we will have an agendized discussion about how the city of Morro Bay will fit into the overall scheme of this plan. So that's something coming, and those were my two announcements.
Rick? Melody?
Yeah, the only announcement I have is just to thank the volunteers and the Chamber of Commerce. It was an amazing kite festival this year. We didn't have as much wind as last year, but we had, I think, double the people there. And it was great to see them all. I went and flew my kite for a while, and I think Bob could testify that I beaned a few people, whacked them a little bit. But onward to our third one next year. It's going to be great. Let's just pray for wind that weekend and not all the weekends before it.
Okay, and that reminds me, I did forget one thing. Shouldn't forget this one. On May 17th, which is a Saturday, we're going to have a mermaid and pirate parade. This is our way of introducing the county to our harbor walk. So the parade is going to go from the Rock to Dockside 2, where there will be prizes for anyone from ages 3 to 18, best mermaid and pirate costumes in several different age categories. So those of you who have kids who might be interested, call the chamber to do pre-registration. There's no charge. And we're thinking it's going to be a lot of fun to see all those little mermaids and pirates out there. So that's May 17th. That's a Saturday. Okay, our business representative tonight is Cindy Hall from Precision Tile. Is Cindy here? I guess it's not. All right. Well, Precision Tile is a wonderful place, and Cindy will speak another time. All right, so we have police and fire reports tonight. Who wants to start?
Yeah, we could flip
Chief
a coin.
Wind.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight I just wanted to mention a few things. We've begun our annual weed abatement program. Notices went out in April, and we expect everybody to be Johnny on the spot and have all that nice, fresh, green grass mowed and cleared off by June 15th. And June 15th, we will start our inspections of the lots and be sending out notices for those that have not complied. Firefighters are working hard on preparing for wildland season. I think most people have seen Sierra Madre down Southern California already burning. Early fire season, there's a lot of fuel. Fuel moistures are already lower than they were at this point last year, so it's a year where we need to really be prepared. They're going through their annual checklist that they have to go through to meet all their OSHA mandates. But also on Wednesday night, our fifth Wednesday drill of the month, we're going to be out on the 500 block of Kings and on La Loma doing some special training with Station 15 from Los Osos, Cayucas Fire, Cambria Fire, and Company 14 and Station 12. We're going to be practicing structure protection and just bumping from house to house. We've contacted some homeowners who are going to allow us to do that. And we'll be doing some progressive hose lays and shelter deployment training as well. Also coming up May 1st, that's coming up real quick this week, it's the CERT class that's going to be taught again by Bob Newman. Those classes will be held partially in Morro Bay and partially at Station 15 in Los Osos. They'll be held May 1st, 6th, 8th, and 13th, and 15th from 6 to 9:30 p.m. Classes are about the use of those, and some states and some communities have already banned their sale. With that, I'll turn it over to Chief
Brian. So they're things that kids could pick up and think it's a toy, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. You can look at those, a little football, little cat, Dalmatian. They're making them at little fire engines and fire hydrants, and they think it's a toy. They even have little magic markers that you push a little button and it ignites. And the kids, you know, 3 to 4 to 5-year-olds just don't know that it's dangerous.
Wow. Thank you.
Great. John. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I, too, went down to the Kite Festival after the parade, and there was lots of people having a great time down there with a great weather, and we had lots of people throughout the day, and everything went smooth, from what I understand. So we did have one mishap at the parade. We had a volunteer that tripped and fell and actually broke her wrist just prior to the parade, and so she sees an orthopedist this week, and we wish her a speedy recovery. On Friday, we had an incident where a couple pit bull type dogs attacked a small Jack Russell Terrier and caused some major injuries, and this incident is under investigation by both the police department and the county animal services. So we're looking for a great and fun car show this weekend. The Friends of the Police Department, Friends of the Fire, and Rotary are selling raffle tickets for a Toyota Prius, and so they'll be on sale down there at a booth at the at the car show this weekend. They're $100 a piece if anybody is interested in that. And also just a reminder to folks that, you know, generally when the economy goes down, generally crime goes up. So it's just a reminder for folks to lock their doors. We've had some vehicle burglaries and things like that. So let's try not to be a victim. Lock your doors. Help us police the community. Just a reminder. And that's it.
Thank you. All right. Closed session report.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, councilmen in closed session to discuss pending litigation. The pending litigation discussed was City of Morro Bay versus Martini. The other items discussed was labor negotiations and personnel issues, including the city manager. No action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
All right, thank you. Before we start our public comment, after our last public comment, which got a little bit exciting, shall we say, a couple of times. Someone who was watching sent me the requirements for public speaking in Durham, North Carolina. And I'm going to read a little bit of this because I find it very appropriate. Civil, respectful, and courteous discourse and behavior are conducive to the democratic and harmonious airing of concerns and decision-making. Uncivil discourse and/or discourteous and inappropriate behavior have a negative impact on the character and productivity of the decision-making process. Some of the requirements in Durham for speakers are: speakers will refrain from the use of obscene language, fighting words likely to incite violence from the individuals to whom the words are addressed, or other language which is disruptive to the orderly and fair progress of discussion at the meeting. Speakers will refrain from making comments of a personal nature regarding others. Name-calling and/or obscenity is forbidden. Shouting, yelling, or screaming is forbidden. That's Durham. Now, as you come in, there is an agenda available for all of you. And on that document, you have the rules for our public comment. And I'm going to review those initiated. This is an honor system. Free speech prohibits us from actually telling anyone to stop talking. But being an honor system, I would ask you all to please act honorably and address us as you would expect to be addressed if you were up here. Public comment period will now begin.
I would guess that that goes for you guys calling the citizens nuts as well. Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Kathy Wells, a resident of Morro Bay. Mayor, at the last council meeting, you were overheard after calling the break asking who the heck is Kathy Wells. That says a lot about how in touch you are with the community and how well you pay attention to the speakers who come before you at public comment. It wasn't the first time I'd spoken before you. I've lived here for 34 years. I went to Morro Bay High. I've lived here longer than any of you. I have the right to speak here like anyone else. I have the right to be angry with my city government, and I have the right not to be shouted down by my mayor. We citizens also have the right to not be called nuts by our elected officials. I'm angry with all the people sitting up there. I'm angry that you've stopped all building in our town with your outrageous, ridiculous, unfair fee increases. I'm angry that you don't support our fishermen. I'm angry that you talk about supporting business when you clearly do not. I'm angry that you're selling the residents on the idea that we don't have enough water when we're not in any kind of water crisis. We have no water shortage at all. I'm angry that you foolishly spend unbudgeted money on things like a stupid generator when we have much greater needs in our community. I'm angry that you bought a building in the middle of town and have let it sit and deteriorate for the past 8 years instead of fixing it up and leasing it and giving it life. Doesn't that embarrass you just a little? And conference center, please, we've been hearing about that for way too long. And I'm especially angry about being lied to. I'm angry and insulted at Melody's reference to good old boys. Who exactly are you talking about, Melody? The good old boys who built this city, the good old boys who are our fathers, our sons, our brothers, and fellow parents and neighbors, the good old boys who run the businesses and are responsible for the majority of the tax money that comes into the city for you to spend, the good old boys who aren't teachers. Tell us who you're talking about, Melody. I'm angry that the incumbent candidates for mayor and council are promising things they haven't been able to accomplish since they've been in office. In all my years here, I've never seen local campaigning as pompous, absurd, nonsensical, preposterous, and deceitful at this time. The incumbent candidates talk about how pro-business they are, how you're going to turn things around. All I've seen since you've been in office are business-killing action. Who wants to come here now? No one wants to do business with this city and its overfeed, overregulated, business unfriendly, no growth, don't build here attitudes and agendas. And now all of a sudden you're going to be our saviors. Give me a break. Call me nuts if you want to. I call it anger, and I have every right to it. I want to see new people up there. The three of you running, if you win, God help us all, will just be more of the same old crap.
Some people weren't listening to what I said.
Okay. Good evening. My name is North Main Street. About a quarter of them, 23%, were riding on the sidewalk or on the wrong side of the street. We think that's because a lot of cyclists don't feel comfortable riding in the narrow southbound lane on North Main Street. However, riding on the sidewalk or the wrong side of the street is unsafe and illegal. A staff report in 2003 found that many businesses supported removing parking on North Main Street to provide for bike lanes because they thought that would improve the sight distance. North Main Street has fairly high-speed traffic on it. However, two businesses objected to removing the parking, and council at that time took the bike lanes out of the city's bike plan.
Since that time, though, a couple of locations on North Main Street have provided bulb-in parking spaces in front of their establishments. We don't want to take away parking that people need to run their businesses, but if we can provide bike lanes without interfering with business needs, we think that would be a great enhancement for safe bicycling on North Main Street. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council and staff. I'm Colby Kratzer, a resident of Morro Bay. And to second what Bob just said in terms of it's great to see the evolution of our city direction in terms of recognizing how important it is to have these kind of ecologically friendly and tourist-serving kind of facilities that make Morro Bay an attractive place to come visit. That looks like it's our revenue stream of the future, and that's far reaching in terms of its vision. You know, I've been a strong advocate for bike lanes. The ones that we've achieved, I think, are a great augmentation to our city's quality of life and the visitors as well. Also, it looks like you're moving forward with something that the residents are asking for, a place to recreationally let their dogs off leash in Del Mar Park. It makes sense that the staff has been wise enough and your motions have maintained the dog park should not be on top of a tennis court project that's been planned for a long time. So kudos again on moving forward with that. I hope that that works out for the community as well. Other communities have them. In terms of that tennis court and all of this is that good process, I think, is really important for good government. That your citizens come to trust when they see over a long haul that there is a vision, that we have a general plan that tends to be followed, that we have these work plans, like the work plan in our Parks and Rec work plan is money, that the projects that have been planned a long time, that tennis court project that I mentioned before in Del Mar Park has been well over 20 years, I guess, in the planning. It's been graded for, I guess, 18, as long as I've been looking at that portion of the park. And we hope that that project goes forward. It looks like it's going out to bid soon. That money was allocated by the council project for the locals, and it's a regional serving project for tourists, et cetera. So I hope that that moves forward. If there's an attempt by a candidate or a council member that wants to revisit that again and at the last moment just take the money out of that project, I think it's a very bad idea. And those that signed that petition would certainly be urged to oppose any candidate that would care to do such a thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Typically, we do have people line up over there, so thank you.
Good evening. My name is Richard Sadowski. I'm a citizen of North Morro Bay. And on the overhead, I would like to show a local paper that has to do with issues in Cayucas, Morro Bay, and Los Osos. In this edition of The Rock, there's two articles that pertain to our community. One is on page one, where it talks about the clear damage of the Morro Bay's wastewater collection system. As you council people already know, I used to work for the Cayucas Sanitary District as a staff member. Mr. Pierce, you were on the board when we used to have our JPAs. Ms. Peters, you were there as well. I've had spent the last 4 years trying to educate this council on the fact that we have a severe, severe public health and safety issue with regard to our dilapidated infrastructure. The pictures are shown. Mr. Grantham has actually viewed the videotapes with his own eyes, and Bill Boucher in the last Public Works meeting stated that the damage is more severe than he estimated previously. Now, the issue is this. You guys are elected officials. Ms. Mayor, in January of 2005, I sat at the Community Center District with you, and I explained to you what was happening in Cayucas and what was happening in Morro Bay with regards to building. And there's an article on page 6 that talks about some of the ways that things are done. Your staff, I'm telling you right now, is lying to you, okay? And that being Dylan Shea Wade and Bill Boucher have already lied to you three times with regards to the sewer management study. They stated they reduced INI through water conservation. Then, again, a lie about the nitrate study. The nitrate study was showing the farmers are polluting our water, and that is not necessarily the case. They didn't even investigate the use of bioxide, which was being used by Cayucas in the summer of 2005 to the tune of 2,000 gallons a month. Now, when I worked in Cayucas, we were using ferrous chloride to address the H2S issue, and that was we were using about 1,250 gallons every 3 months. This turns into synthetic fertilizer, and with our dilapidated infrastructure, this is being ignored. It's time that you represent the people. That's why the people are mad, because you keep ignoring these public health and safety issues. And, Mr. Grantham, when I bring this up, I don't appreciate you telling me, oh, well. That's not a concerned council person when it comes to public health and safety. Oh, well, it's not a good answer.
Thank you.
The residential and the use of commercial standards to justify the request. This project, when originally designed, did not contemplate using a portion of the building for a residential use. Therefore, it is devoid of any routine and required residential conveniences such as a garage, parking, and more. Just because it sounds like a good deal to allow this conversion, the problems associated with it should not be overlooked. Specifically, the following items should be again discussed. One is, what is the square footage fitting for the Embarcadero area? Two, required parking standards and the payment of in-lieu fees for residential use. Three, safety issues regarding any bluff cuts. Four, noise. While it has been stated that the hot tub is for private use, I have not seen any condition limiting the use of the hot tub for that sole purpose now or in the future. Number five, building within the easement area and commercial versus residential setbacks. Six, avoiding visual blight from the bluff above by imposing conditions regarding landscaping, architectural materials, screening equipment, and lighting. Or better yet, do not allow the tub, shed, or storage in the rear. And seven, the prior project conditions, which are still unresolved. In summary, the neighbors object to once again to the approval of this project because there is insufficient information provided to make a proper assessment, inadequate protections in the way of project conditions, failure to adhere to prior project conditions, and violations of parking requirements, safety, visual, and other general city policies, as I stated before. I would respectfully request the council reconsider the decision and deny the project based on the facts and the merits of the concerns that have been raised. Thank you for your time. And while I've got a little bit left of one public service announcement, somebody has told me that there's a red Miata outside that has their lights on. Thank you.
Red Miata, anybody?
Oh, there we go. Madam Mayor, City Council, city employees, wanted to address this since my wife's not here tonight. She's out of town, Nancy Johnson, who's involved in the as a gardener in the Demora Bay Flower Show that we're going to have. Now, it's going to be during the car show this year. It's going to be the first annual, and it's going to be floral road trip design. That's the theme of it. And as you go in there, you'll see all kinds of car parts and all that with flowers in it. Now, it's going to be presented by the Montana D'Ora District, California Garden Clubs, Incorporated. It's going to be held at the Morro Bay Library from 1 to 4 on Saturday, and it's free. You don't have to pay for it. So as you're walking up to see the cars, you can make a left or right turn on Harbor Street and walk a block and see the flowers, take a break, and then continue your looking at old cars, okay? So that's it on that part, and I do want to thank, people do criticize the fire department and all this. Well, our neighbor across the street had a heart attack, and I would like to say that the fire department was there within minutes, got an ambulance for Angie, and off to the hospital she went. She's doing fine, and after it was all cleared, I had my grandsons there, and they went over to look at the fire truck, and they brought him up, put him in the fire truck, and guess what, Grandpa? They got it on the fire truck. That's how important the fire department is to us. And I also want to thank, during the kite show, because our young youth get criticized so much. The young, I don't know what they call the young, the police office, or the volunteers, the young police office. Pardon me? The Explorers, yeah. They did a super job of directing traffic and all that. So if anybody are listening, I want to say thank you. That's
thank
it.
You.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Marla Jo Bruton. I'm a citizen of North Morro Bay. I would like to tell Serge expertise, professionalism, and it is an opinion, an educated opinion on what's going on. I find it just incredulous that we have no response from the city. The nitrate study report, I have told Mr. Schultz if he would like a copy, he can request it. And I haven't received that request. I also want to speak about this new newspaper, The Rock, and I would like to tell the people at home and here that this entire edition of this paper is online at www.rockofthecoast.com. So if anyone is interested in checking out what's in the paper, if you haven't received one yet, I would encourage you to do that. In this paper, we have an article on the clear damage of the wastewater collection lines, and then a very interesting synopsis of what's occurring in our community as well as communities all across the United States of America right now. And I'd like to say that I've been watching the candidates' forums, and I would encourage everyone who's a candidate to please listen to all the different angles from the citizens, not just the ones that you're familiar with. And also, as far as the collection systems goes and the wastewater treatment plant, one of the candidates for city council said that there's a revenue stream for that. That revenue stream is the ratepayers. So I hope the community steps up. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm John Zwemer of Morro Bay. I'm speaking in regards to the noise abatement subject from the April 14th meeting. And I'm aware the council has not yet made any decisions regarding this and that is being brought back in a future agenda. So due to some talk made about a ban on gas leaf blowers, I want to say that I'm opposed to such an idea since I use one on a daily basis to do my gardening service. Electric blowers can make just as much dust and mess when used carelessly and just aren't practical for commercial use due to a lack of available power supply. And for noise, I looked up Toro brand electric blowers for the level of sound decibels created during use. And their smallest model with a 7-amp motor creates 63 decibels to their largest 12-amp motor creating 67 decibels. My handheld gas blower by Echo is also at the same sound level of 65 decibels. So there is no benefit for electric use due to less noise being created. As for pollution created by gas machines, I found on the website for the California Landscape Contractors Association's misuse, like blowing debris onto public property or into streets. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. I'm Jim Nance, resident of Morro Bay. I agree with the last speaker. Pretty much 100%. I don't think the city should waste time on an ordinance to ban that kind of equipment. I also on North Morro Bay, Maine, on North Main Street in Morro Bay, North Morro Bay. I don't think the street's wide enough for a bicycle lane. You'd have to take out all the parking. I think an alternative might be to run the bicycle lane up another street, maybe up through the park. There's bicycle lanes on the other side of the freeway, so it might be a good idea to have the bicycle lane up by Del Mar Park. And let's see, I don't agree with Kathy, but I'm glad that she has the, not Kathy Novak, but the first Kathy, I'm glad that she has the right to speak at these meetings. The impact fees and the increases are still the lowest in the county. And the main thing I came to speak on tonight is it's a good gesture that the low-income assistance on water and wastewater rates have been put on tonight's agenda. I urge the council to give this item some real attention and adopt two ways to help Morro Bay residents. A would be to set up an account from the general fund with a fixed amount of money to offset rates for low-income users. This would be allocated to residents on a first-come, first-served basis. And B would be to lower the base rate from 3 units to 1 unit so that those full-time residents who only use 1 or 2 units will only have to pay for that use. Please, Mayor, Bill, and Rick, help our seniors and low-income residents trying to meet the higher cost of living here by passing these two measures. And finally, seems like they're always saying that there's a couple of members on our council that seem to have all the control, but they're actually the minority, and the minority votes. And I don't really see, seems like the majority is the ones that are the most progressive here, and I can't see how a change is going to make anything any different. And I think our council is a good council. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay citizen. A couple of items I'd like to address. First, I'd like to thank Gary Ream and his many volunteers for organizing and helped to put on Let's Celebrate the Morro Bay Parade that we held Saturday past. Wonderful parade for Old Town Morro Bay, and he couldn't have asked for better weather. So my appreciation and gratitude to all who participated in making that a success. Second thing, I'd like to support Mr. Davis's urging you on the bike lane for North Morro Bay. I'm fully support Highway 1. We need to have clear delineation made to not only the auto drivers but the bicyclists. And third, as long as I have a moment, I'd like to lend my support for a off-leash dog park in Del Mar. Please, let's do it. It's been long enough. Tourist and citizen alike, resident alike, will benefit, and that's what you're up there for, is to create benefits for all of us who live here. And as long as the light is still green, much has been said about the leaf blowers. I brought it up at the last meeting not as a criticism so much as leaf-blowing machines, but really just to have a discussion on it. I, unfortunately, live near a lot that uses the leaf blower, so I personally am opposed to that particular leaf blower. But I do think it's a wise time right now to have a discussion on noise abatement, etc. And the light is turned orange. This is wonderful, Janice. This is nice.
Thank you, GP.
The mic hasn't gone off yet, but that's good. Anyway, have a good meeting. I thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Good evening. Finally, someone's lightened it up a bit. I think you all look dumbstruck there. That was pretty violent, and I guess we all feel that way sometimes, and we aren't allowed to do it because you've just told us that we wouldn't do it at the beginning of the meeting, but I do second some of those opinions. Looking at the agenda and the people who have been talking, it's really hard to know which to talk on, but dog park is my thing, but I will say leaf blowers could be leaf suckers. There are such things as bags, and you can suck it instead of blow it, and then it doesn't go all over the neighbor's yard. Let's see. What was the other one? The water usage, yes. That was another one I will back up because my bill's gone from $29, $30. It'll go over $50, and it is really tough, and I think there has to be some relief for those of us who are on a very limited income. The bike lane, yeah, the cars do get in the way, but if you go up through Del Mar Park, that's a long way out of some people's way if they're just going along North Main further out. One thing that does disappoint me is that it seems like there's a conflict between tennis and dogs, and there shouldn't be. This is a town of 10,000 people, and we have lots and lots of dog owners, and we should have the right to have the park. Now, the MOU has come to an understanding, but okay, so I still want a tennis court. I do want tennis courts, but they don't have to be in the way of the dog park. Reason being is that Walpole promised us tennis courts in 1890, and it's now 2008, and we don't have a damn ball, excuse me, no swearing, a ball out there to hit on a tennis court in Del Mar Park. And the other thing that's sad is that I play in the league. It took me 27 years to get in the tennis league, the B league, because it was always full. And I'm finally in it. And then when we play at home games, we only have three courts to play on because since 9/11, we aren't allowed on the school property. Surfside built the two courts at Morro Bay Junior High, at the Junior High on South Bay Boulevard. We can't use that. We can't use the high school. And we use Las Osas. So somebody has to wait to play the fourth game.
We're going to be gathering at the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Harbor Street. In conjunction with events held nationwide, May Day events, citizens concerned about the direction of our country. And I've been concerned for many years, and when I first started noticing things, people were hesitant to talk about it, but I think that there's a growing concern. And from, you know, a war that we were lied into, and now we're talking about, are we in a recession or a depression? People are really concerned, the rising gas prices. So we're going to be having a respectful and peaceful march around the block where the Morro Bay Park is. And we're hoping that everybody will come, business owners, workers, students, every walk of life, joining with, in conjunction with strikers. They're going to be longshoremen in San Francisco are going to be striking, letter carriers and different labor unions. And mostly I think it's just really important to give the people a feeling of unity. And a democracy of, by, and for the people can't happen if people don't express themselves. So I really hope that people will come. It starts at noon on May 1st. And bring your signs, your concerns, your solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll bring it back to council. Thank you. Any comments on comments, anyone? No? All right, gosh. How about we do the consent agenda before we break? Anybody want to pull the item on the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull the minutes, please. Item A1.
Okay. That's it, so go ahead.
I think it was an important point in our discussion on the Embarcadero project, Great American Fish, Virgis Landing, and Harbor Hut, that we, towards the end of our discussion, talked about two phases to this project, and yet our minutes didn't reflect that. So I would just like to add this phrase. I think you all have copies. I'll read it for the public. It would be inserted before the motion on page 11 at the top. And it says, Kathy Novak noted the concept plan is proposed in two phases. Phase one includes the additional square footage of the Great American Fish Company fish market, the floating docks, all the floating docks, and the harbor walk. Phase two includes the new Virgis building and tide boat restaurant along with the underground fuel tanks. If there is no objection, I would move to amend the minutes with this addition.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right.
Thank you.
That's our consent agenda. Let's push ahead and do our future agenda items. I'd like to bring one up. I would like to have a discussion
of removing in-lieu parking from the downtown for at least a five-year period until we get business up there. I'd like to discuss that. Okay, anything else?
I'll give that some support.
Okay, so we would like a staff report on doing that. And any other future agenda, Betty?
Yes, I'd like to put on the agenda planning guide the...
Costa Rica picks it up, or anybody else.
Is that something that we have to have a...
I think we would have to direct staff. It would be an expenditure.
Go ahead and do.
I know Promotions Committee has been asking for it, and I plan on attending their next meeting, but obviously I think the reason why I came for you, because they've asked me to do research on it and look into it, and I don't take direction from the Promotions Committee. I have to take it from the council.
That's not something our advertising agency would just be able to do.
That's a legal thing.
No.
Okay.
I'll support that.
Okay, me too.
Okay.
All right, so that one's for you. All right. Trademark. Okay, anything else? No, we'll take a short break and we'll come back with our public hearing items. Get back to business. Item B1, resolution initializing proceeding to levy the annual assessment for Cloisters Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. And Andrea?
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. This evening we're recommending that you adopt Resolution 19-08, which then directs the preparation of an engineer's report to review prior to the levy of the annual assessment for the Cloisters Park and Open Space. The assessment district was formed back in September of 1996, and the city began maintaining the area in January of 99. Each year, as you're well familiar, we begin a series of three public hearings to actually levy the assessment, which will happen sometime in late June. The resolution directs us to prepare a staff report, which will detail the expenses that we anticipate for the maintenance of this 34 acres of parkland and open space for fiscal year 2008-2009. The current annual assessment for the maintenance area is $148,944. By adopting tonight's resolution, we will be bringing back to you an engineer's report at your May 27th meeting. That concludes my staff report. I'm happy to answer questions if you have them this evening.
Any questions for Andrea? Okay, there's a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Anyone want to make a motion or discussion?
Unless there's no discussion, I'll make a motion to that we move adoption of resolution number 19-08, initiating the proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Park and Open Space Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. And item B2, resolution number 20-08, initializing proceeding to levy the annual assessment for North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. Andrea?
Similar to the prior resolution, this also directs the preparation of an engineer's report prior to the levy of the annual assessment for the North Point Natural Area. This assessment district was formed in December of 96, and the city began maintaining the area in January of 1997. Tonight's resolution orders the preparation of an engineer's report that will detail the expenses in maintaining this 1.3-acre natural area for fiscal year 2008-2009. The current assessment for maintenance of this area is $5,645. If you adopt tonight's resolution, we'll be bringing this back to you at your May 27th meeting, as well as the Cloisters. Again, happy to answer questions.
Any questions? All right. It's a public hearing. Anyone wishing to address this item, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back.
Del Mar Park. Through negotiations, we were trying to reach an agreement that would include both the planning stages and permitting process and also the construction and the maintenance, but had quite a few iterations of a draft that we were having a difficult time get to an agreement as to who would be responsible for the construction and maintenance and what would happen if those obligations couldn't be completed. So we decided to take that out of the equation and come back at that at a later date, because it might be one of the scenarios that we're now looking at is that once the planning and permitting process is through, they find that it'll be much easier, the group finds it'll be much easier to raise funds, and that in fact we might open a city funding account and actually place the money in, and it would be an entire city project. As you know, going back, this is a city project, but it doesn't have any funding whatsoever. So, you know, there could be an iteration where they might, yes.
I want to ask one question there, because I know I had designated some discretionary funds
towards that. There's about 5,000, I think,
okay.
in it. So there is, we do, but it's very small.
Okay.
Yes.
And I didn't know if that perhaps had been used by staff in doing this. Or
no,
okay.
No funds have been used whatsoever. They've used their own volunteer work to do the plan that's in your package, and there's been no charges for any permitting or staff time whatsoever.
Okay, thank
so
you.
The funds are still there. But then we haven't yet determined how that maintenance and construction would work. It might end up being a city project. It might end up being a project that they construct. There's all legal requirements involving prevailing wages, and it was just becoming difficult and bogged down in that process. So we thought it'd be simpler. Let's get through the permitting and the planning to make certain this project is an approved project for its location, because as you know, it's been somewhat of a controversial project. The history is pretty lengthy that's in your package. And so it's in front of you for approval. Staff's in favor of the MOU, Morro Bay Pups is. The one issue that came up in the memorandum that Morro Bay Pups did to you and that I bring up is that they would like to see this once the plan is refined to come directly back to you, and our policies and all our past practices always been when you've approved to do a master plan that it first goes to the Rec and Park Commission for their approval and then either directly to you or possibly to Planning Commission depending on the recommendations made by the Rec and Park Commission. So that's your other issue that deciding so that staff has direction on that issue. We believe that it is important to go through that process with the Rec and Park because it provides more public input at that early stage on the process before it gets to you for final determination.
Okay, just to clarify on that one, the only one that you think would have to go to would be the Planning Commission, depending on what Rec and Parks would recommend.
Yes, I don't. Okay. I mean, Andrea, I don't.
There's no reason for it to go anywhere else.
Yeah, there's absolutely no other reason. And sometimes Planning Commission, I believe in the past, has said we don't even need to see it. You can just go directly to council.
All right. Other questions for staff? Anyone? Nellie?
Yeah, I was looking at this timeline that you provided to us, and it says in January 2004, Rec and Parks approved the amended master
project. That after that time, Rec and Park staff has kind of changed its opinion that this might not be the best location, but based on your direction, we're proceeding with the amendment.
So, again, if in April 2004 it says the City Council rejected the revised master plan, wouldn't it be up to us to kind of take back that rejection and say it's okay?
If you wanted to circumvent and not go through and have the hearing at the public recs, you could at the Rec and Parks, you could do that. We're recommending that it has the hearing. It is a somewhat different plan, much more detailed than the plan back in 2006, or is that 2004?
2004. I've seen the plan actually on their website and in here. And the word circumvent, I would like to just change that to speed up the process and not go through so many iterations. And then it seems to me, too, that this got legs again, as you said, in December 2005 when the public area use permit was not renewed. And I think that had something to do with an insurance issue. And so they had gone on, I mean, as dog people and running their dogs there kind of informally. And I just want to note that they got legs again was because they didn't renew the use permit due to insurance constraints. Just to kind of keep things kind of up to date and clarify. Thank you.
Okay, Rick.
Rob, just for clarification, when it was denied or said it was the wrong area before, it's the same area that it's proposed to go to now. Correct? Not where the tennis courts
were. Correct.
There was talk about putting them where the tennis courts were because there was such an organized, intense resistance by all the residents of that street, Island Street, to putting it in the area that we're now saying we want to put it again. Is that right?
Correct. And another delay on why it's been even a year is the fact that we were closely watching staff in the Morro Bay Pups
the issue of the 100-foot setback that was going on with the Quintana project, the Colmer project, because if that was going to require a 100-foot setback, then this would probably require a 100-foot setback. The plan that's in front of you was able to come forward now because at least that issue's been resolved, and all we consider this being allowed to be a 50-foot setback also from where the fence will be.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing, and the representative from Morro Bay Pups, Mr. Elster, has requested 5 minutes, so... Oh, do I have to turn? There we go.
Mayor Peters, members of the City Council. My name is Steve Eckes. I live at 154 Sicily, and I'm a member of the board of Morro Bay Pups and have been asked by the president to make the Pups presentation to you this evening. We soldier on. This has been a long process for all of us. I'm relatively new to the process. Many of you are veterans longer than I. But it's a project well worth soldiering for. The attached to your staff report is a memorandum from our president, Mary Stallard, and it summarizes, of course, their nonprofit status will enable contributions to the organization for this purpose to be tax deductible. We've also had the plan that is in your staff material, and if the overhead is working here, I'd be happy to put it up so that it can be seen. But I'm technically challenged, so. I'll set it there and perhaps someone can help me with it. Thank you. We've met with the city attorney and with your staff and resolved a number of issues about this site and this plan. It's not necessarily cast in concrete by any means, but as you know from seeing your copy of it earlier, this is an attempt to design this around the tennis courts. They're going out to bid, I'm told, this summer, and you'll have bids back maybe late summer, early fall, and we'll have a better idea of whether or not that project's going to go forward. But we need to go forward in good faith with you and design this park around and to enhance even that portion of the park near the tennis courts. And just in passing, I'd like to very much thank Rob Schultz, your city attorney, who's wonderful to work with and just is excellent to discuss these issues with. Tonight there are three issues before you. The first is your consent to process an amendment to the Del Mar Park Master Plan. The second is for you to give us some direction with respect to how that amendment will be processed, and the third is the approval of the MOU. The consent to process the amendment is not an approval of an amendment. It's not an approval of the site or of a particular dog park. It's simply an agreement as to you're agreeing to let us, in effect, amend or be the applicant for the amendment of the master plan of your park. We need your consent to do that. The second component is the MOU itself. As your city attorney advised you just a moment ago, this is the first of a two-step process for MOUs that we contemplate. This deals only with the permitting issues. By the terms of this agreement, the city agrees to advise the Pups in writing of all permit requirements within a 30-day period. The city agrees to process the plans and the applications expeditiously, and the city agrees to waive the ordinary processing fees that staff would normally charge for that kind of work. Morro Bay Pups agrees to prepare or have prepared the plans and the permit documents and agree to pay for that. So this is a something of a new approach in partnering recreational facilities for the city, and we're prepared to step up and become that partner. Then after public hearings and approval of all permits, a second MOU would be prepared, and that MOU would deal with the construction and the maintenance issues. Finally, we request this evening your direction regarding processing this amendment. Discussed this at considerable length, and it's certainly not our wish to cut off that public debate. Quite the contrary. These things need to be aired fully, but we also need to make some progress. And so it's our request of you that you decide who you want your advice from your commissions, and declare that this evening if possible, so that staff and the PUPs can go forward together knowing what that process is going to be. One of the most difficult things when you're in our position and kind of groping your way is not knowing what's going to be required. And in this case, the reason that this request is made for this clarification is because in discussing it with the city attorney, we concluded that it wasn't altogether clear what that process should be. And so we need your help in telling us what you want. And then, of course, we'll live with whatever it is that you want. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm available to answer questions about the MOU.
All right, we may do that afterward, yeah. Okay, this is the public hearing. So anyone else wishing to speak on this?
Hi, I'm Joe Hovlick, and I'm a secretary of Morro Bay PUPs, and I don't want to take too much of your time. I don't need the 5 minutes or anything like that. I did just want to come by and just you know, remind a little bit of the history. I have been walking my dog over through Del Mar Park, actually dogs, for the last, since 1995. Unfortunately, Sugar, our oldest pup, is no longer with us. She couldn't enjoy the dog park over there because, you know, she had cancer a couple years ago. But we do have a new little dog, and actually the story from the fire chief, I believe, or police chief, when he sat down tonight about the little dog that got attacked by the bigger dogs, I think is a perfect example of why we need a dog park in Morro Bay. If we had a dog park, then it would have had a separate area for a little dog and another area for the bigger dog. Sometimes the way it works out is dogs who are aggressive end up in one area, dogs who are not aggressive end up in the other area. And it's amazing how well the dog owners become self-policing of those sorts of situations. And then when you start to see dogs that are off-leash in other places, you can say, you know, there's an off-leash dog park. That'd be a perfect place for you to go. And you have the people who are responsible pet owners who do the things like remind people to pick up after themselves. And when you see another dog dropping, making their droppings, offering a bag, and that sort of thing, so that helps our whole community. And it's wonderful for the dogs. It's a great place to build community. There's all sorts of other opportunities to show benefit to the community. The Sugar, the dog who passed away, she was a therapy dog. We would take her regularly to the nursing homes. Our newest little pup, our little Chihuahua Papillon mix, she's going through the process to become a therapy dog. There's opportunities with the police. We could set up a neighborhood watch program. How many people do you see out walking their dogs all over the community? Wouldn't it be great if they would just use their cell phones and be organized as a neighborhood watch and be educated as to what that process looks like? And then there's also the training benefit. You could bring in local trainers to help and participate in opportunities. There's the friendships. Virginia, some of my other friends here have been walking their dogs with me over there for, like you said, 12, 13 years. Samantha is no longer with us either, and she's a wonderful dog. But yet, Virginia's still a member of our Morro Bay PUPs. To date, we've raised approximately $10,000, and that's without the plan, without the formal direction of what we're doing and moving forward. We know that as we continue to move along and start to make progress, people are going to come out of the woodwork. Our numbers continue to grow. We continue to have great representation at our garage sales. And
our town as a beautiful, quiet town by engaging and clearly articulating to residents such as these that are organized and prepared to follow the process that it's laid out to solve some of these lack of services that may be presenting themselves because of our internal budgetary needs. So I think it's important to work with them and to help them along, so we encourage other groups as they identify needs within our community to also participate. These guys have put a lot of effort in, and we need to recognize that and make sure this is expedited. So I hope you do a good job with this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Yoko Okamoto, new citizen of Morro Bay. When we moved to Morro Bay 2 years ago, we thought, what a beautiful city, and we saw so many dogs, very well-behaved dogs, and we were very impressed. At that time, we lost our dog of 15 years, and we were very sad. But Eventually, the time came, and we adopted a dog from the shelter. She is a sweet but wild dog. Everybody knows how wild she is. She's sweet but very wild. And she needed, or we needed to socialize her with people, with other dogs, and we need to go to the obedience class. We actually went twice already, two courses. First time we failed. And I took her all over Morro Bay, attended all the events so she can get used to people, she can socialize with people. But I looked for a place that we can socialize with other dogs. And I was surprised that I couldn't find any dog park here in Morro Bay. And I would like to be a very responsible dog owner, and I want my dog to be a good citizen. She's getting better, slowly but getting better, you know, people know. And I don't know much about the history of this dog park issue, but I wanted to mention that, how much I want to see that built, and my dog want to see built so she can be a good dog. And I also met those wonderful people through that dog park event or issue or whatever. So I would like to see that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. All right, who wants to start? Do we have any questions for the pups, first of all? Representatives of the pups?
Nope.
Okay. All right, any comments?
Well, the only comment I have is that when this issue first came up, I had a healthy dog that liked to walk. And since then, she got old and died, and we're still talking about putting a dog park in. So it's time that we made a decision one way or another, and I certainly at this point would support going ahead with this MOU.
Rick?
I support going ahead, with the MOU, but it was so intense and so organized and so strong. And you kind of see it as a movie that you're going to watch it again. So do whatever you can. And I'm telling everybody this, not just the pups, but the people that are planning, get it as far away from Island Street as you can. Your chances of success will increase.
Melody?
That wasn't the most crowded night we've ever had by any means. You've seen actually, really, the whole room was full of very angry people one night. With due respect to the residents on Island Street, and I bet some of them own dogs. And I bet some of them use this park to walk their dogs around because there's an entrance from Island Street. I believe that this isn't in the same place. You can shake your heads no, but I think that 50-foot buffer has pulled you back. This is also a very underutilized part of Del Mar Park. I went there with Janice for the tree planting on Arbor Day, which is just kind of to the east of this area, and there was nobody there. I used some funds a year or two ago to plant some trees there, went out there with the city guys. Nobody's there. So this is an underutilized part of our town. It's an underutilized part of this park. I compliment the Morro Bay Pups for moving it out of the way of the tennis plan. And, you know, we shouldn't ever pit citizens against each other. Tennis players and dog owners are the same thing, as Jane said. And we should just progress and make progress as fast as we can on something this worthwhile and something that's been underway since March 2001 when we indicated that an off-leash dog park was an important city goal. So the only thing that I would add in any direction to accept this MOU is that we also add the direction that we speed the process and try to get it back here sooner than the 14 months since the last time and get it done.
Jenny?
I'm very much in favor of approving of the MOU. I'm very much in favor of having it come back to council. We can have whatever public comment happen to us. since we're the ones that brought it back a year ago and said, yes, we're going to do this, here's the direction, bring us back the MOU. We've got the MOU. I think it's at this level. We can keep it at this level, and I'm ready to act on it.
Okay. Well, I, too, want to see this happen. At the same time, I'm reluctant to abandon the process, and the process is for this kind of a amendment to the Park Master Plan that we go to Parks and Rec, and we appoint these people to do this job. And the city attorney is looking, reaching for his microphone. Have you got a point there that I'm missing?
Yeah, no, it was a resolution passed in 89 that set forth these steps that you should take when processing an amendment. Mr. Eckes commented about it being a vague area and having that conversation. That conversation dealt more with the fact that amending a master plan such as this could be considered a project which would require CEQA and go through the planning stages. We've never done that. Instead, we do the CEQA when we actually do the construction and development. That's how we've always done it. But there is...
Before, that doesn't count?
Yes, because it's a different plan.
Is it not the same location? It's just more detailed?
The plan wasn't even done by an architect. It was just a round circle that showed an area with some trees. It was very, very vague. Yeah. I don't have that with me, but it was very vague.
But I think it's a concept plan, is it not? And that the detail's not necessary, and we're still talking about the same location. I guess... Not to have the dialogue, but to maybe say that to the council, that I think that we've been there, and I think that we're ready to move on.
Melody?
Well, I think we've been at this area with a couple of other projects in town where we simply go back to Rec and Parks at their next meeting so that we proceed with some haste through that process, instead of just saying, go back to Park and Rec. So I think if we gave them direction to, say, the next meeting, that would help a bit. Could I ask a couple questions of either Andrea or Joe? I was surprised to hear that is the tennis RFP out to bid? Is it out?
No, that the RFP is not out to bid as we speak.
Oh, I was stunned to hear. I'm sorry to hear that. I thought it was going to be going out right away.
Well, you heard that we'd be looking to go. We'd like to get permits in hand from the Planning Commission, so we're trying to get on their agenda to get our permits in hand before we go out to bid. So we're very close in a couple months, and this summer is definitely doable for us.
And so we think we'll get responses back by the end of summer.
Oh, I think so.
Okay, because it kind
it's,
of...
It's a timeline that I haven't sketched all the way out for an exact date. Mm-hmm. You know, late summer, early fall...
Well, I think we've heard the interest for longer than the dog park about tennis courts, and so it would be really nice to just put it out there and see what the potential is, if that is potential, that they could build courts there. So thank you. And just for that notion that we put on the next Rec and Parks agenda.
Well, I tend to agree with that. I think we really do have to go through the process. We need to honor the people that we appoint to do this job. And it is even a different group now, so I think they need to be aware of it. I think they need to look at it. I think we need to go through the process to bring it back. And I agree, it should be put on their next agenda. So, okay.
You want a motion?
Yeah.
Well, our next agenda is this Thursday, so maybe the following would help us out.
So it's too late to notice it? Yeah. Okay.
It would be the one right after that then.
Okay. All right. You want to do a motion, Bill?
Okay, I move that we approve the Memorandum of Understanding with Morro Bay Pups and direct staff to process the Del Mar Park Master Plan revision consistent with our practices and policies, and that we further direct staff to send it to the Rec and Parks Commission at the earliest possible meeting.
Okay, any more discussion?
Yes, I would have a question then. If we include the word practices and policies, does that also include the Planning Commission? Are we restricting it to Parks and Rec Commission? I'd like to know how far this is going to go.
I would like to see it go to Rec and Parks, but unless somebody finds a legal...
Item B4 is an ordinance amending a section of the Morro Bay Municipal Code regulating automatic fire sprinkler systems. First reading and introduction, Chief Pond.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor and Council. Tonight, staff is providing revisions to the automatic sprinkler ordinance with ordinance number 538. This will increase fire safety and life safety in our community. Both the safety element of the general plan and our Morro Bay Fire Department five-year strategic plan support a more stringent sprinkler ordinance for the city, and our proposal is in keeping with the recommendations in these plans. Many of the communities in our county have already adopted more stringent ordinances, and if you look at Attachment 8, you'll see that only Cayucos, Morro Bay, and Paso Robles have not adopted a standard that is either zero-based or 1,000 square feet or less. The fire service in general has understood the effectiveness of automatic fire sprinklers for many years, and we see them as being like having a firefighter in your home or in your building or your business or your commercial occupancy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. These sprinkler systems typically activate one head at a time and will either keep the fire small or suppress the fire and keep it in check until firefighters have time to respond, arrive, and put it out completely. These sprinkler systems are important for giving the occupants of the structures time to get out. Without the sprinkler systems, the fire remains unchecked and continues to grow until discovered and firefighters called. I like to kind of relate fire sprinklers in the home to passenger restraints in vehicles. I can remember when I was growing up in the 60s and the seatbelts first came out. My dad was resistive to the seatbelts. He thought they'd cost more. He had an arm. He could hold the kids back. Didn't need them. But both fire sprinklers and the seatbelt systems are engineered for the safety of the occupants. And I think by improving our safety in the home, we improve our safety for our citizens. When you look at those cars that didn't used to have seatbelts and that now have seatbelts, we wouldn't expect anything less. We wouldn't expect anything less than a lap belt, shoulder restraint, airbags, engineered passenger space intrusion protection. And we're just coming to that point with the building industry. And, you know, fire sprinklers have been around for quite a while now, and they're more and more making their way into homes and smaller buildings because of the benefits that we see with them. The biggest deterrent to the installation of fire sprinklers has been cost. Nationally, and looking at the National Sprinkler Coalition, figures show 1% to 1.5% of construction costs would go towards fire sprinklers. Locally, in talking to one of the businesses, I found that the cost for a new home run $1.75 a square foot for an average home between 2,000 and 3,000 square feet, up to $2.20 a square foot for a house in the 1,000 to 2,000 square foot range. And for a commercial building, the cost is around $3 per square foot. Knowing that the regularly for subdivisions like the Cloisters Project, all those homes are sprinklered. For Morro Cove, those homes are all sprinklered. And for the subdivision that was approved for Black Hill, those homes would be sprinkled as well. The new code that we're proposing requires all structures in excess of 1,000 square feet be sprinkled, as well as buildings undergoing alterations, which increase square footage to in excess of 50% of the existing square footage, or an increase of 1,000 square feet. Additionally, the new code requires full NFPA 13 systems in mixed-use buildings. In other words, for a commercial project on the bottom floor and residential above, we don't want mix and match of a 13 system for commercial and a residential, which is less stringent for the other floor. We want a consistent system throughout the building, and that would require the NFPA 13 system. And in addition to that, we're requiring sprinklers in elevator shafts and laundry chutes. These weren't addressed clearly in the fire code. And with that, I'll turn it back to the council, and feel free to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Questions?
I do.
Bill?
You and I had a conversation earlier regarding one of these things. My concern has been that we keep sitting up here talking about affordable housing, more affordable housing, and yet to take, you know, at 1,000 square feet, that's about as small an affordable house you could get, and add several more $1,000 to the cost. And the question I had of Chief Pond was, would it be prudent maybe to bump that up to like 1,500 or something a little higher, so that if you're really talking about some low-end housing, that it would be less painful for people, especially if you're talking about a remodel. If you've got somebody that is working on a small house, an older house, and you end up by affecting 1,000 square feet to sprinkle an existing structure, is pretty pricey, isn't it?
The costs for retrofitting and a remodel are 3 to 5 times as expensive as putting them into a new building. So a new building where you'd pay $1.75 a square foot, you can multiply that times 3, 4, 5 times, depending on the amount of work. If they need to remove drywall, if they need to put in a new water connection to the house to supply the system. So there are some increased costs with retrofit.
Are there any concerns about reliability? I bring that up because I know of at least one new construction in the city that before occupancy, one of the sprinkler heads started leaking, and I could just see that on somebody's antiques or something.
You know, the reliability, New Zealand has been led the way as far as studying sprinklers and keeping data, and they find them to be 99% reliable. In the United States, studies that exist show 96 to 99% reliable. Data that was provided by the manufacturing industry indicates that just for manufacturing errors, only 1 in 16 million fails. So what we've seen in town when we've had a sprinkler head go off, it's typically been due to mechanical damage where somebody struck it with something. The person installing it didn't keep the protective covers on the glass bulb, and they rattle around. So usually it's a problem in those areas, and we tend to find those and correct those.
It's a turnoff.
There are valves to these systems, yes, but the easiest way to stop a leak or an activated sprinkler head is a little wooden wedge. You just slide it in, and that's what we do in the fire service. We go in, it's called a sprinkler stop. You just slide it in, and you just tap on it, and the water flow stops immediately.
So you do that to one, and they all stop?
Well, only one head goes off at a time. So if you have a fire in your house, the heat will go up to the ceiling. The closest head will activate when the temperature exceeds 165 degrees. So that head will flow and keep the fire in check. If the fire has grown, if it's gotten into a fuel that will exceed the capability of that head, as the fire grows and goes out to where the heat gets to a second head, then the second head will activate. But these systems are designed to keep fire small, keep the flow, the egress in a structure open so that people can get out, keep the hallways open, doorways, and keep the pathway to the outside open.
Melody, any questions?
Yes. In Section 4 in the new language page, the difference between A and B there, this is where we have remodels or alterations. So I'm just thinking, and I can only think of things in real terms like my house. What would it be like? So if there's an increase of 50% of the floor area or an increase of more than 1,000 square feet of floor area, and in my house, 50% would be 500 square feet or 1,000. So is it going to work in this ordinance to have two things that could be so far apart, like a 1,200, it would be 50% would be 600 square feet or 1,000? So are we going to get bollocked up with that little or business?
I don't think so. I think for me the goal is to sprinkler to those structures that are 1,000 feet or larger. And, you know, 50, 100 years from now, all the structures probably will be sprinkled. But it's going to take time. So, you know, if we're starting today with very few sprinkled, and as you mentioned, you add, let's say, 500 square feet to a building, but you've now exceeded the 1,000 square feet and you're up into 1,300 or 1,500 square feet, I think it makes sense to sprinkle that building.
Could I just say, I think, Mr. Schultz, are you looking at this language of this? Do you see any problem in defending A versus B, or Do you see any problem there?
Could be clearer.
I think it could be clearer that which is which, you know. I like the intention. It's just that I don't want to give staff a big problem trying to figure out which is which, including yourself.
I agree with simplicity. This language is fairly common within the county.
Betty, do you have a question?
Yeah, I think Mr. Merritt might be waiting for Mr. Schultz to say something, but I would, it's a comment, and I think we're still looking for questions, but it might be helpful. It was helpful for me. I talked to Chief Pond today also about that there's different kinds of sprinkler systems and that some are made for residential aren't as costly as when you get to the mixed-use project.
Our pipe, it uses a less expensive material. It's a CPVC type pipe. It doesn't have a double detector check valve on the system. And another difference is the commercial system requires a 5-year service, whereas the residential one doesn't. A 13R system is a third type that was put into use, and the 13R is utilized in residential multifamily structures, and those can be up to 4 stories tall, or, and I got to think of it here, it's more than 4 units and not more than 4 stories tall.
Rob, did you have any suggestions on wording?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Let's go to public comment. Maybe somebody will have something else to add there. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. Or maybe not. Okay, we'll bring it back to council. All right, so any suggestions on how you'd like to reword that to make it more clear, Melody?
I don't have any comment about that particular section. I did want to make one change on a different section.
Okay, go ahead.
It's on the very back page, and it's under number 10. And I would just like to, because we don't have, our code does encourage 3 or more story buildings, that under section number 10 where it says, the second sentence says chutes, extending through 3 or more floors, I would just like to suggest that this say chutes extending beyond 2 stories shall have additional sprinklers. So it catches up that idea if it ends up having more, but.
Okay, anybody else have any problems with that? Okay. That's your only comment? Maybe?
That's my only comment. I would like to say that I appreciate the work of having the table that was added to our packet to compare to other communities. My initial reaction was, wow, a jump from no sprinklers to 1,000. But when you see the trend and how that's going, see how lacking we were with only protecting the Embarcadero, that I've become agreeable.
Bill? I'm going to support it, obviously. It's something we need to do. I still have those concerns as outlined. Incidentally, Melody, if you added that 500 feet to your house, it would cost you just under $9,000 to retro it when you did your remodel.
Thanks. Mayor Peters, should we invite public comment before we...
We did. They didn't have any.
Man, I was getting some aspirin. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, Rick.
Question for Chief. Let's take that building, the new project that's being built on Morro Bay Boulevard, for example. Okay, so it's a multi-story building. We're talking about sprinklers on each level. But there's a lot of separate office spaces in that building that'll be less than 1,000 square foot. How do you determine which of those get sprinklers and which are not required?
It's all one project.
I realize that, but if you have separate...
They would have to be separate buildings with space between the exterior walls to be considered separate. If they're on one footprint within the same structure.
I'd keep it down to 1,000 square feet just to encourage affordable housing. And as to the language of 4A and B, I don't think that's my job to revise that language, and it would be too dangerous. If Chief Pond says that this is what he's seen in other cities in their fire code, I could be fairly comfortable with that. And if our city attorney says it's okay, then
Tonight's the first reading. If we take a look at it and there's just a minor adjustment, that could be done at the second reading.
Okay. All right. Well, this was part of the emergency services report. We went for this, and I agree it's necessary. I too, had the concern about small homes because, gosh, you've got a 900-square-foot house. You want to add 450 feet, and you're going to have to do the sprinkler, the whole thing. But at the same time, it's those very small homes who often are older and may have a more likelihood of having some sort of an electrical problem or something like that. So it really is, it's a safety measure. You will save a little bit on insurance, I would think, in the long run, that would be an advantage. And if it saves a life, that's priceless. So I'm going to approve it as well. Who would like to make a motion?
I'm ready to make a motion.
All right.
That the City Council, I move that we amend Section 14.60.200 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, regulating automatic fire sprinkler systems, and adopt Ordinance 538 with one adjustment to the language on item number 10, replacing through three or more with beyond two stories.
And this would be the first reading and by title and number only.
Thank you.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None.
This is ordinance number 538, amending section 14-60-200 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, regulating automatic fire sprinkler systems.
Okay. We are moving ahead of schedule. Do we want to take another break now, or you want to keep going a little while? Try C1 before the break?
5 minutes.
All right, 5 minute break. Caretakers Unit at 1140 Front Street. And I'm going to let Rob tell us how we need to handle this. I haven't done this before. And
well, I think first we'll have Mike review how we got here, at least on the project a little bit.
Okay.
But I guess I can do it now. You did have this project. Your appeal was denied through your motion. And then subsequent to that, you made a motion for reconsideration. What that means is, after he brings you up to speed on the project, if you need anything, is that there is now a motion on that table. That same motion is on the table, and you can deliberate on that motion, but it's still there, and you have to act upon it. So even though you did a motion for reconsideration, you agreed to reconsider that motion, but it's still on the table, the motion that was made by... Councilman Gushin is back on the floor for reconsideration. And then if Mike wants to give a presentation of the project, we can, or if you don't need that, that's fine.
Okay, and that was my other question, because I believe the applicants here are ready to make another statement, too. So do we reopen the whole thing? Do we just have a vote on that motion again and then reopen it? I'm not sure of the procedure. And I'm
public
sorry, I didn't check with you earlier.
Public hearing was closed. You do have the right to reopen it, but I would suggest that you do not do that.
No, but for the applicant to be able to say something.
That's going to be your decision on whether you need that direction or not.
Okay.
Legally, you can or cannot. It's up to you.
I have a question for the city attorney. Yeah. Okay, so if we have a vote and whatever way the vote goes, that ends the matter, doesn't it? It's not open for reconsideration after we vote on this motion, is it?
If the vote still was 3-2, even after now, the fact that it wanted to be reconsideration, then it's over, the appeal is denied. If it's 2-3, then your motion fails and you're open for another motion on this.
Okay.
All right. Mike, why don't you do a presentation and then we'll go from there.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. let's see if I can remember this project. The project was to convert... two motel units at the Front Street Inn for a caretaker's unit. The caretaker's unit ranges about 1,200 square foot in size, and that included an office space and an open floor plan for the room. The project was appealed by nearby residents that lived directly above that also spoke at the Planning Commission meeting. They raised a number of concerns that was pretty detailed in length. All of those concerns were considered both at the Planning Commission stage and at your council level. The City Council, as Rob indicated, ultimately made a motion to deny the appeal and uphold the approval for the project. Barring that, the council also directed staff to look at other caretakers units that had been approved in the past. And so I put together a table list of all of those that I could find. In addition, I also notified or contacted many of the downtown and Embarcadero motel hotel units to confirm whether or not there was a manager unit on site or not. But was not able to get the square footage of those particular units. So I've also compiled that information for your council as well. So that's my brief presentation.
Okay. Questions? Did Chief Pond look at the project and give your approval on this, that you felt that this was a safe plan?
Yes, both Dan Dorse and I have looked at the project, and it does have the appropriate exits and access to the windows for a secondary exit.
Okay. Questions? Anybody?
Somebody should be able to ask this question. If this does go forward and we have two of the units go to residential and four of the units stay for commercial, is there any way that the city has of controlling that those are always used for visitor serving and not for...
The city doesn't want to rent out any four and just keep them closed year-round, they wouldn't be. But the big issue is more they can't be used for permanent residents.
Okay, any other questions? Do we want to hear from anyone else? Do we want to comment, go for a vote here?
I'd like to have a discussion.
Okay, let's have a discussion. Go ahead.
I appreciate Mr. Lori's letter and pointing out to us that as we go into the new code, we may have allowed some more residential units in places we don't want them. So that's a discussion for another day. I think it's important to note that at the bottom of this front page, of the staff report, it says that caretakers units require a conditional use permit and is discretionary by nature. So though we can say you can have up to 50%, it doesn't mean you get to, we have to allow 50%. We have discretion, and I think that that's important. I think one of the things that's been bothering me about this, and there's two items in particular, I think. One is that, to me, this is a little bit unique in terms of some of our other visitor-serving facilities, in that this is a facility, it's two-story, and the bottom story is completely separate in use from the upstairs use. And so the caretaking really isn't of the whole building, in my mind. It's of the upper floor, which makes this probably close to 50% use anyways. But we don't do it by use. I think we do it by building. This is just such a unique situation we haven't had before, I don't think. Excuse me again. So, to me, it's riding pretty close to the line of 50%. My other concern about the project, again, is the ancillary facilities in the back of the building. And I went and looked it up in the dictionary because I said, what does that mean? You know, it'd be an accessory, this or that. And, you know, it means to support, to help, to contribute toward the running of whatever it is that you're doing. And they use the reference in the dictionary of a reserve army, that you use that to support your main army. And so if the caretaker's unit is there as an ancillary and it has ancillary buildings with it, like the hot tub and the storage shed, then they ought to go toward the support of the facility, which is the motel aspect of the building. So I guess I'm not seeing the excess buildings on the backside as being directed towards supporting that activity because they're for private use. not for the public's use, and that was one of the concerns of the appellants, was that they not be used for the public. So the reason I voted for the motion in the first place was because I wanted to protect that hillside. I didn't want it cut into, and I appreciate Mr. Grantham putting that into the motion. But in truth, I don't want anything back there. I would like to keep it as commercial as possible. I'd like to keep it as a caretaker's unit, and that you caretake that property. You're there to do a job. And yes, it would be nice to have those. Bill?
Well, the only thing I can say is, assuming that that there is a problem with the hot tub, the storage shed could be, certainly fits in your definition. I mean, if you have gardening tools or something, you certainly don't put them in something that's going to be used by the public. So by your definition, the storage shed would be included anyway, because they have to store anything from gardening implements to whatever, spare chairs. I mean, you store things. By that definition, I could see where the storage shed is not a private use thing but supports the building. The hot tub, I'm not sure I buy your definition on that, but assuming I did, you're still seeing that the storage shed would fit.
Rick?
Well, I haven't changed my mind from 2 weeks ago. I still want those conditions put in, and my feeling remains the same.
Melody?
Well, actually, my feelings have become more concrete since the last hearing of this, and I would like to just put it to rest. My feelings are becoming more concrete for several reasons. One of them was that I drove by this place when I was trying to get out of the Kite Festival the other day and had time to sit and just look at it. And I remember when Mr. Laurie was building this project and recently going over and seeing it. These are custom-built rooms for residents. So this afternoon, for visitors. We hope for visitors. So this afternoon, I went on to their website to take a look and again saw what beautiful rooms these are, and they run for $149 to $189 a night. I was shocked, actually. I thought they'd be $2 to $3. It's a beautiful building front, beautiful rooms inside, and it's sitting at the best location in town. It looks straight out the harbor mouth. It is the absolute best location, most beautiful rooms, and it will be the worst loss to the city if we convert these rooms over to residential. We lose TOT on those. We lose revenue. We keep talking about building revenue stream, and we're going to lose it. So ideally, I would uphold the appeal and just not have this project go residential. I want it to stay commercial visitor serving like the zoning. Now, if that doesn't get done, and it probably won't by this majority, but I would at least like to get the stuff out of the backyard, and I mean all of it, the shed, the hot tub, everything out of the backyard, because as soon as you change that into about 50% residential on top, and you have the disagreeable kind of thing going on with the neighbors, and you then start to call the backyard of this commercial project residential so that they're up there gardening and sitting in their hot tub, I'm just not very comfortable with that at all. I think it will make, at the very least, to get that stuff out of the backyard makes it a much more peaceful neighborhood. It reduces the conflicts up there. But ideally, I would certainly uphold the appeal. And if you notice that the first project out of staff, or the first report out of staff said, don't do this, you know, don't let them convert this. And it cited all parts of our LCP and such. And I just think that it's... think it's inappropriate for us.
Well, I initially was not in support of the motion, and the reason I wasn't was because I was concerned about consistency. I try and be consistent. It's not easy, and I'm learning that these things are just, you know, each one's different. My concern was about the office space, because we just looked at something on Beach Street where we were concerned about an office that could be another bedroom, and that this was
a potential for that too. But then I also realized that this one, the only office it has is that office that's behind the kitchen in this upstairs area. So I, and looking at the figures on the others and the percentage of square footage with caretakers units, I really, this one is so low compared to the others. And for us, I understand what you're saying about losing TOT, but at the same time, if their business there is not viable enough for them to want to keep those two rooms, then who are we really to say that, you know, it's better for them to leave it for rental rather than live there and perhaps save on their rent somewhere else? So I don't buy that argument. As far as the storage unit, I agree. I think, you know, you've got very limited storage capacity in that building, and that certainly would be used for the commercial uses as well. The neighbor situation, I did talk to one of the neighbors, and they were not in objection to either the hot tub or the storage unit. The neighbor above was in objection to both, and actually for gardening and stuff, they're the ones who have done a lot of gardening and then undone a lot of gardening. So I think anything that we do to make that hillside prettier is going to be an advantage to both parties. So I don't have a problem with that. So I, at this point, I'm going to vote in favor of the previous motion. So,
Ms. Mayor, I'd like to just respond to some of the comments. The first one, Mr. Pierce, is regarding the storage shed. There is a storage area in the building, I believe on the very north side, and so things that would be pertinent for that building could be used there. I'm not sure that a storage shed up that far away is going to house things that you're going to need frequently because of that railing firewalk that you have to, fire staircase that you have to come down to get things up and down. So I would assume that what's in that storage shed is going to have to be things that deal with up there behind the building, and so that really is for personal use rather than for the building. And there is not a yard in the front of the building. Certainly there isn't in the back. Excuse me. And the whole concept of the rental, I think it's just a reminder that this is a commercial area, and to maximize that is the whole reason why this project came forward and why it was readily approved, was because it fit commercial visitor serving. And so I'm not sure about the rental thing, you know, where that comes in, why that wouldn't be a good thing and viable. I can't imagine that it's not a profitable business if they're advertising and people know about them. Certainly if they see them, they would just probably have a waiting line for people to rent their rooms. So what I'm hearing is that it sounds like there's a majority to pass and allow this project to go forward. Do we have it such, Madam Mayor, that we could not restrict the items in the backyard then, or that we can keep from cutting into the bluff?
Well, the first thing we have...
Where it's down of 3 or 4 feet. That was my intent. Okay. When you build fence posts, I mean, it's necessary and it's prudent to put in fence posts. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that, yeah, they're allowed to do. But
so basically, everything needs to be kind of platformed, the shed and the hot tub.
Well, the way we left it was, however they can do it without cutting in the bluff. We're telling them they can't cut in the bluff. It's up to them to work it out how they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. I did have one question, and that was there was mention of a security gate. Do you recall that being one of the requirements from that, for the main entrance from upstairs to into the building?
I believe that was for the original building.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, and that apparently isn't there. Is that something that we could also add to the requirements?
There is a doorway, a locked doorway, mm-hmm. that is required to go through before you go to the exterior staircase. That doorway could constitute that gate. There is not a physical gate.
That's the security.
But that is the security measure, is the doorway.
Okay. All right.
Could I say something?
Yes.
If we're going to approve the motion that's in the minutes on page 8, that motion has to be amended anyway to take out the fire chief will review fire exits of said caretaker's unit, because he's done that, and he's assured us that he doesn't have a problem. So we have to amend it anyway. So then would we be open to amending it further?
Rob, do we need to amend the motion?
That's up to the motion maker. He can amend it or leave that language in there. But obviously, it's a motion that's on the floor, and any amendment can occur by the motion maker, and who the second would have to agree with it.
And there is no motion on the floor right now.
No, there is a motion on the floor.
There is.
This motion.
That's on the floor. All right. Any more discussion?
Excuse me, what is the motion again to accept this?
That's the motion, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you one more piece of discussion before I vote no. And that is that you can't have beautiful rooms at the most beautiful location in town and not be filling it up. So I would just suggest that we get those other two units filled.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, it's 3-2 with Winholtz and DeMeritt dissenting. Okay. And another review. Review of phase one of the concept plan approval of Great American Fish Company Verges Fishing Project located at 1185 1215 Embarcadero. And this one, I know that Kathy Novak has a presentation about some changes she made. Mike, do you have anything in advance of that? Or?
No.
Okay.
I presume
maybe. All right. And Kathy, I think 10 minutes, you said? Is that good? Okay. We wanted them to make changes.
Well, then, can we Madam Mayor, can we clarify for a minute then? In our motion in the minutes, it talked about bringing about phase one. Mm-hmm. And not talking about phase two until we talked about Measure D. So I'm not sure how this is all fitting together tonight.
Phase two?
I'm not sure. I've been out of the loop on this, so I don't know all the changes that are being made. Obviously, the motion was to just look at phase one mm-hmm. here, but certainly you guys can hear the presentation of where it's at and then determine what you want to do with the project.
Okay. All right. So shall we hear the changes anyway, as long as we've got it on the schedule and Kathy's here.
As long as we're not making a decision on it.
We'll determine that after we hear
I mean, that's going to be council's determination.
Okay. Go ahead, Kathy.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here this evening representing the applicants for the Great American Fish Company, Harbor Hut and Verges. Excuse me. Tonight I'd like to address two specific topics that the council had asked for additional information on. One was intermittent use with respect to the docks and the harbor walk, and secondly was the Measure D consistency for verges in the tie boat. I will also go over briefly the requested project modifications and the Planning Commission conditions. First, you asked me to provide examples of intermittent use. While I'm still a little unclear is exactly the intent of the council, I'd like to propose the following things to hopefully we'll resolve this. Number one, the harbor walk will be the lateral access component of the project to satisfy the city standards. Two, the harbor walk intermittently flows along the water's edge since the public will have access to the T-pier and the floating docks. Number three, the floating docks will be open from 8 a.m. to sunset. Number four, there will be two gangways and one ADA-approved lift to access the docks. One will be at the Verges Tackle Shop building and the other one on the southern side of the Harbor Hut restaurant. Secondly, there was considerate discussion about Measure D, and I heard two concerns from the council. The first issue was about Verges and itself, whether Measure D was allowed for this business. The discussion centered around the language in Measure D that states in part, quote, for serving and facilitating licensed commercial fishing activities or non-commercial recreational fishing activities, end quote. I would like to point out that Ordinance Number 207, Measure D, states the following. Quote, the people of the city of Morro Bay do ordain an ordinance relating to the restriction of further developments and uses between Beach Street and Target Rock to those primarily serving licensed commercial fishing or recreational fishing as follows, end quote. It is clear in the ordinance that Verges, who has been there for over 50 years, was contemplated and allowed to remain. I would also like to mention that the California Department of Fish and Game classifies Verges as a, quote, commercial passenger fishing vessel as opposed to an individual recreational fishing. Verges is required to have a commercial boat registration and Fish and Game vessel registration numbers issued by the department. State law allows a commercial passenger fishing vessel to commercially fish, but not when operating under its passenger carrying license. In consideration of these two items, there should be no doubt that Verges is consistent. The second issue regarding Measure D consistency was with the tie boat. The project proposed to take the first and second floor square footage from the existing site and relocate this on the second floor in the new tackle shop building. During your last meeting, you expressed concern for consistency with Measure D for the tie boat. Because of that, Verges has modified that portion of the project in the way it truly fits within the parameters of Measure D and will be amended in the following way. First, the new second-floor restaurant will be 952 square feet, which is the same as cannot relocate them. Thirdly, Measure D says that the development or use is primarily for the purpose of serving or facilitating licensed commercial fishing activities or non-commercial recreational fishing activities, or is clearly incidental thereto. Relocating the tie boat directly serves or facilitates the fishing industry for the following three reasons. First, it allows for the installation of the marine fuel tanks serving and facilitating a commercial use. Two, by raising the site and relocating the driveway, it allows for better vehicular access to the fisherman's dock and other businesses along the alleyway. Three, whether the marine fuel tanks go in or not, there is additional space created that will assist the city or a developer in reconfiguring the entire block from the tie boat to the Coast Guard building. The city has had an idea for many years to demolish that section, move what's now the dockside upstairs, and put the commercial fishing-related businesses below. In fact, in 2001, Driscoll's Wharf developed a concept plan with this idea. Had the project been able to proceed, it would have meant two things. One, a non-conforming use, now the dockside, would relocate, and two, it would have provided additional area for serving the needs of the fishing industry. I recognize that we do not have a developer at this time, nor does the city have the money to proceed with a project. However, we should not be short-sighted, and we should keep this as the vision for the future. Lastly, the tie boat was deemed consistent when it was approved in 1999 for the sublease. This relocation is not changing the intensity of the use or anything that has been previously approved. This project as a whole is about sustaining and promoting local businesses, one of them which has been in Morro Bay for over 50 years. As a community, we should support the health and well-being of the businesses such as Verges and at the same time support the endeavors to comply with the law. With this project change, we feel the project should be found consistent within the spirit of Measure D. Next, I would like to briefly go over the project modification list and the Planning Commission conditions to refresh everyone's memory. I gave you a copy of this during the break so you could follow along. For GAFCO, there are six items. First, to eliminate the additional 8-foot floating dock section and fence. Remove the security gate, platform, and gangway proposed off the south T-pier and install a ladder from the building to the dock below. Extend the docks southward toward the south T-pier approximately 43 feet. Pay for the installation of the harbor walk in front of the business and deem that the lateral access for the project. Delete condition number 20, which is the cantilevered boardwalk, and the construction timing would be phase one and as soon as feasible after permitting. For the Verges Bait Dock, there are two items. A $5,000 contribution toward the harbor walk, and construction timing would be phase one as soon as feasible after permitting. For the harbor hut, there are four items. Pay for the installation of the harbor walk in front of the business and deem that the lateral access for the project. Reduce the enclosed dock space as much as possible. Delete condition number 20, which is the cantilevered boardwalk. And the construction timing would be phase one as soon as feasible after permitting. For the Verges building, there are actually 10 items. Number one is to pay for the installation of the harbor walk in front of the business and deem that the lateral access for the project. Two, eliminate the cantilevered boardwalk on the west side of the building. Shorten the westernmost finger-style dock by 15 feet. Reduce the enclosed dock space as much as possible. The second floor will have 952 square feet for the restaurant and three. The commercial fishing industry and other marine-dependent businesses need to reevaluate, change with the times, and diversify in order to stay alive and well. When Driscoll's Wharf proposed the fish market, now the Dockside 2, he had to add a food service component to the project because he could not survive solely on a fish case and compete against stores such as Albertsons, who have the ability to sell fish and buy fish all over the world at a minimum price. It was a good concept back then. It's still a good concept today, and we should all be grateful that it's there. As a community, we need to recognize these limitations and be flexible. As a city, if we strictly interpret our regulations to allow only commercial fishing uses, open space, and government buildings, then I believe the northern Embarcadero will fade away further until we hit a major crisis. The city can help and support these efforts so we do not lose the last sport fishing or other prominent businesses in our town. I will close with one last thought, which is from the 2020 Vision Report. Vision H2 states, quote, maintain economical, viable, commercial and sport fishing industries in Morro Bay, end quote. Sorry about that. On behalf of the applicants, we are asking for your support for the entire project and the modifications that I presented this evening. That concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Okay, anybody have questions for Kathy? No? Rick? Yeah.
Hi, Kathy. Regarding the floating docks.
Yes.
So we're going to be mandating somebody that's going to make sure these things are open at by 8 o'clock in the morning and closed at sunset. And we're putting, what, gates with a lock on it? Is that what they're envisioning?
Over toward the Verges side, right now there's a locked gate. So Verges is responsible for closing the gate in the evenings down on that end. On the bait dock side, there's just a chain across a gangway, which is kind of a traditional way that the docks all up and down the waterfront have done.
But you're going to have two different areas. You're going to have two entrances or two exits, you know, with two different property owners, correct?
Actually, the gangway on Verges Bait Dock will be controlled by, that's a Verges lease site down that direction, and then the Verges on the north end. So it's pretty much Verges, but we could involve and ask the Harbor Hut for assistance, too, if it comes down to that.
Okay, so like I said, we'll be mandating someone to open those up by 8 and close them at night 365 days a year.
Right.
And I agree that it should be closed for safety and security reasons. Are both of those entrances, are they going to be gates that swivel and close, or what do you envision there?
The northernmost one at Verger's Tackle Shop now will probably be real similar to what we have now, which is there's a wooden gate across, and then the southern one at the bait dock down area will probably be pretty traditional like we've got now, with just a chain across that has a little sign. So I wouldn't be seeing iron or gates, you know, fences across the gangway, especially down at the bait dock area.
Well, I'd like to see something a little more substantial than a chain with a sign, because floating docks can be...
Okay, here.
For the Brown Act, the purpose that you really need to look at is exactly what the agenda item said, because that's what the public sees, that's what we post. We don't post the staff reports.
We don't post the recommendation in the agenda when it goes out. I think we do, don't we?
Yes, the agenda. The staff reports is not what I'm most concerned about. It's what's stated in the agenda.
I'm not concerned about the staff report, but I saw you get up, and it was right at the same time I saw that C2 says a review of Phase 1.
Yes.
And then the subject is a concept plan approval. And so I just want to make sure that we're not...
For tonight's meeting, the only thing you can do, there is an issue that has come up that's been pointed out. Because the agenda only says Phase 1, that's all you're able to approve tonight. However, you do need to take it up. You know, and staff's mistake that we didn't list it correctly, because you still have their project that you do have to act on. It just can't be acted on tonight because it does say only Phase 1 will be taken up on the agenda item. So I apologize for that. I didn't notice it. It should have said what the staff report says, which is the concept plan approval for these items. But unfortunately, that's not what is posted. What's posted and what was noticed to the people was that a review of Phase 1 of the concept plan for Great American Fish Company, Verges Landing. So that's the only thing that's on your agenda tonight. You will have to, though, come back, though, because they do have an application and are asking either for approval or denial of that other phase unless they withdraw it.
Well, I would just say that C2 and what we noticed the public is exactly what was in the motion from the previous meeting, and I wish that we would have done that, or because I'm anxious actually to get this plan put together and going, but I'm also anxious to follow, one, the Brown Act as it's supposed to happen, and also Measure D, and I've already talked to Ms. Novak about how we're adapting this for Measure D. But
first issue for tonight, which you can act on, is Phase 1. You can approve or deny that.
then it's up to the applicant whether they want to come back at the next hearing with the phase two for approval of denial on that. You have to act. You haven't acted on phase two. You have issues with Measure D. They've tried to correct those issues, but you will have to either approve or deny it. You can't say, well, let's just wait till after some future election.
So what we would be voting on tonight are the modifications for GAFCO and Harbor Hut, correct?
Phase one.
Phase one.
That includes the Verges Bay Dock.
Okay. Not the Harbor Hut?
Harbor Hut, Great American Fish Company, and Verges Bay Dock.
Okay, so those three we're looking at tonight.
Oh, excuse me, Kathy, could you be clear about what you mean by Verges? What is it, the bait dock?
The bait dock, which is the lease site between Harbor Hut and Great American Fish Company. And when I was on your list that I gave you this evening, I said that for the Verges bait dock, there are two items.
Phase
the $5,000 contribution for the Harbor Walk, and phase construction timing is phase one.
Right.
So it's just a floating dock in that lease site.
All right, so those top three are what we have under consideration tonight. And then we can bring back the other part of the project, phase two, for discussion. Okay. All right, are we all clear on that? Phase one included GAFCO, Harbor Hut, and the bait dock, which is between the two.
And I thought, Ms. Novak, I thought that phase one included all the docks down there, too, that it was GAFCO and Harbor Hut and the bait dock. It was all the docks.
All the docks, yeah. The extension.
My impression is that phase one is only the Great American Fish Company, the floating docks, and the harbor walk.
But I think that included all the floating docks.
All the floating docks, but not Harbor Hut.
The only thing that's happening at the Harbor Hut is floating docks.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, I think the way we amended the minutes is correct. Phase two includes the new Verges building, the tie boat restaurant, and the underground fuel tanks. That's mm-hmm. all.
Okay. I didn't understand that Harbor Hut was only floating docks.
Okay. All right. So we're all clear on that.
So could I ask, so it looks like what we can do is approve phase one, which
yes.
I thought we had. And then we can ask the applicant to come back with these other things for our approval.
Right. Actually, we need to ask staff to come back with that for next time.
Ms. Novak, could you explain what you were talking to me about, how this has to go forward to Coastal and the phase one, phase two approach that we're using here and how that translates to Coastal and the kind of costs that the Verges Enterprise might be accumulating?
Sure. If we've submitted the project as the entire project in which we envision going to the Coastal Commission because there are several components of the entire project with public benefits and everything else that will make it a lot easier for the Coastal Commission to look favorably and hopefully approve the project because of all of this as one package. If we separate out the Verges Tackle Shop building and the Tie Boat restaurant, what essentially will happen is that will become its own separate project. I'll be able to take the rest of the project to the Coastal Commission now, but then I'll have to wait until the future for the tie boat and the tackle shop. If it becomes a separate project, then Verges will then have to reapply to the city as a separate project, which will cost a bare minimum of roughly $15,000 for Verges for permit fees alone, because you'll have over $10,000 in permit fees to the city for waterfront master plan and coastal use permits or conditional use permits. Then when I get ready to go up to the Coastal Commission with that portion of the project, it's going to cost another $4,000 of the Coastal Commission to apply for a conditional use permit. Not to mention all the architect's fees and engineering fees and everything else that we need to do to separate these two projects out. It makes it difficult by separating the project out and moving two at two different times. So I would appreciate the city's efforts on trying to keep the project together, and I recognize if you can only approve phase one tonight, if we could look at next meeting so that I can keep the project as a whole going to the Coastal Commission as one project rather than trying to divide it into two.
And then the other discussion we were having, you say that you really believe that this ameliorates the Measure D issues or problems. And
yes.
That it does serve commercial fishing with the addition and renovation of the docks, which are unsafe now. And then also the idea that we're going to put up these, well, I think that's a later discussion, probably at the next meeting, about what's going to happen at Verges. But I think one of the important issues that we have to consider as a council and as the applicant is to really, really address the issues about Measure D, because we've got some people out there. I've talked to some of them, some tonight even, that lived here when they passed Measure D. And we
What happened was, last meeting, the motion, because of conversations that we had during the break at the last meeting, and they were going to separate out one and two, the motion was only to review phase one. So that's what we can do tonight. So can I have a motion on phase one to approve?
Well, I'd like a little discussion on one of the reasons it was coming back to us was because we were not decisive on whether we wanted to have the harbor walk be considered the access, like we've required mm-hmm. other businesses, mm-hmm. and whether or not, or whether we want to keep the walk on the water side. And we have not engaged in that discussion yet.
Okay, well, we have all those presentations from Kathy. Okay, I think that's it for now.
Yes,
you can
and I
probably
just want to let
down.
You know, I did bring a PowerPoint with Measure D on it tonight, so if it makes it helpful to put on the screen, it's on the computer here for you.
I think
you.
That's probably for next time, quite honestly.
Just in case.
Yeah. All right, so you want to discuss these modifications that Kathy's brought forward for phase one?
I'd like to discuss whether, I think more basic than that is, are we looking at the water side at all to meet the requirement that we have had of businesses down there that we will have a water side walk from the rock down to the state park or wherever we're going to end up stopping it, or to Tidelands or wherever. And so I think that's the basic question, which does, how does that fit into this?
Okay, my memory may be faulty on this, but it seems to me that we decided we didn't want that on the water side here because it was a working area.
I don't remember that.
It would require too many ups and downs. Does anyone else remember that? Because it was too many ups and downs, ins right. and outs and arounds, and, well, and you couldn't get access ADA or any other way.
Well, doesn't that depend on how they design it? I mean, I'm not sure that I would even want people to come down onto floating docks at mm-hmm. all. And as I was down there looking today, there's no reason why it can't stay up at the level of all the restaurants. And I think they call it cantilevered, where you, mm-hmm. it's a raised, and it goes around the buildings. And it can go from our buildings, even up by the dockside, which we're not talking about yet. But there's ways to do that. And certainly around the Harbor Hut right now, and since we're talking about the Harbor Hut tonight, that whole patioed-in area, I'm not sure when that became legal to kind of wall that in, and that's kind of where a waterside walk would have gone. So are we just giving up on that?
All right, let's poll the council. How many people feel that we need to have that waterside access on this part of the Embarcadero?
We do have the waterside access. It is in the floating docks. It says right here in the staff report, with the completion of the harbor walk and new floating docks, the public would have access to the water's edge via the South T Pier, two walkways to access the floating docks, one at Harbor Hut with ADA lift, which they described the last time they were here. So we have the waterfront. When they talked about at the Planning Commission about cantilevered and such, that would add tremendous cost to this mm-hmm. project. And I think that we've already talked about restricting them from 8 a.m. to sunset for the safety issue, that there will always be people working on the docks. I think we have the lateral access at the water's edge.
Okay.
And then, sorry.
All right. Rick, Bill, are you in agreement on that?
Well, I was just agreeing with Mr. Grantham's point earlier that I think it's dangerous to have people go down there, whether at night or during the day. That
us come into play on right. this also.
Yes. On the cantilever, I believe it did.
There was eelgrass issues and a lot of the other issues were loss of dock space.
Right.
Verges was going to lose about 12 feet of their bait dock, and then they were also losing them on the other side, on the northern end, too.
Madam Mayor, just a point of information. The dock at Tidelands Park that is there is a public dock, and people fish from it all the time. I don't think they ever catch anything, but they do fish from it, and there is no gate of any type across it. It's strictly just there. So just putting that out there for everyone's edification.
All right, and are you satisfied with the arrangement for access this way?
I'm willing to make a motion.
Okay. All right, so that takes that away. Is there another issue that you have?
Do we need to address now or not address the fact that we're using passenger boats up there and they're not legal at this point?
That's a Measure D item.
Is that a Measure D item, so that's for later?
I believe they're grandfathered in anyway.
Well, I'll just save that discussion
right,
for later.
Why don't we go ahead and do a motion and then we'll have discussion.
If we're going to go to the east side of the buildings then for access, I'd like to know how the $5,000 was determined. Is that the cost that was determined, that that's the length of your building and that's how much you have to put in that sidewalk? When it's grant money, so we're using this as mitigation for some other part of the project. I'd like to know how that came about.
Is that a question for staff? Is that $5,000 equivalent to what we've asked the other property owners to do?
That $5,000 is not equivalent for that frontage. The idea was that the whole package, as it relates, is that each business would sufficiently fund their full frontage. Verge's full frontage is his bait and tackle business and restaurant, if that is to move forward, and that this was a kind of a secondary piece to his business, and it was really only the bait docks that he was occupying as a lease, and so this was a compromise to come up with a dollar value to offset some of the cost for that frontage.
All right,
but
so
all
when we get to the Verges project, which is going to be phase two, then there it says right there,
of the cost
installation of the harbor walk in front of it. So this particular phase one would include $5,000 towards the harbor walk. Is that
but
correct?
There were two different projects that I heard $5,000 for, and it sounds like that doesn't meet the cost of that.
Verges Bay Dock is where it says $5,000.
Right. There's just that one.
Okay, phase one. Why don't we make a motion, Bill?
You see under GAFCO number four, it says pay for the installation of the harbor walk in front of the business.
That's in GAFCO.
That's GAFCO, and then 5,000 at Verge's Bait Dock. I mean.
Yeah. Okay, I move that we approve the concept plan for phase one of the development and that we direct staff to bring phase two back at the next meeting.
Okay, does that include these modifications as listed?
With the modifications as listed.
Okay, now discussion.
And when you refer to modification?
Phase one, and that's public improvements.
And the access to the docks.
The docks, yes. The gangway and the ADA lift to the docks will be done in phase one. The
okay.
other public benefits will have to remain with the new tackle shop building.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure about that.
Okay, any more discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, 4-1. Betty opposed. All right, now, second motion to bring back phase two, and I would like to see
that
it.
That was in my original motion.
I'm sorry, it was? I didn't
yes,
hear it.
Yes, I directed okay. it to come back at the.
Okay.
Right, at the next meeting.
Sorry, I missed that one. Okay, good. We did that too, at the next meeting. All right, moving on. Item D1, recommendation from the website Redesign Proposal Review Committee. And I believe, Susan.
Good evening. Good evening.
I don't hear.
Do you hear?
I'm getting a microphone that works here.
Let's try again.
There you
All
go.
Right.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. At council's direction, staff solicited proposals for the redesign of the city's website. 22 requests for proposal were mailed out. 16 responsive proposals were returned, ranging in price from $14,000 to $108,000. In order to fully review these proposals, a website proposal review committee was formed. The committee is recommending the vendor Civic Plus due to its extensive municipal experience and the appealing websites it has produced. The cost proposal is $23,250, and funding is available from the public, educational, and governmental, or PEG, access fees. Staff is asking Council to approve Civic Plus as the vendor of choice for this project and direct staff to move forward.
Questions for staff?
I have one.
Okay.
Ms. Slayton, what would these monies be used for if they weren't used for this project?
The PEG access fees. I think I'll direct that to the city attorney for the use of the PEG access fees.
Does that include
upgrades?
I'll turn it over
to Janine Burlingame. the full gamut, yes. Any equipment that could be used in here, trying to provide other programming access, you know, the PEG, we really just have the G of the PEG, which is government. We don't have the other, you know, public government stations that could be, but those you couldn't get started for $20,000 either. So it gives you a wide latitude of a lot of things you can use it for, including this.
And
Janine would know much better.
Yeah.
Some of the things that she could use it for, or even Nancy might have some
Nancy's
ideas.
Yeah, Nancy's still here. Nancy, are you back there? Or did she go home?
Chair squeak.
Okay.
Here she comes. My concern is whether or not this would not allow us to do web streaming, which was a priority that we had last year.
Ms. AGP, we're wondering if you know what PEG access funds might also be used for.
I don't think they could be used for the rights under the PEG access rubric that the FCC works. Mm-hmm. That since the money actually is collected by the cable subscribers, from the cable subscribers, dominantly it gets used for cable benefits to the cable subscribers themselves. So by extending it to a website design, it would bear some thinking, and Rob might be the best one to be doing that.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Betty hadn't asked that was the first thing I was going to say as well. Let's see. PEG access is all television. It's public access television, educational television, and what you see on Channel 20 here. And I was having a hard time trying to figure out how that made it over to a website, but I'm certainly not totally opposed to it. It just doesn't initially appear to me that it fits. I'm willing to be swayed, however.
Well, I wonder, too, and I can see it with the streaming. If we get to that point, that's one thing, but I don't know otherwise. Okay, well, now that we've raised that question, Melody, did you have any more information on that?
Not on PEG. Actually, I was delighted when staff brought that up in our meetings. But could you tell me how much is in our unreserved balance fund right now? I think it's about $1.5 million or something.
That would be just our
the
general
unreserved
fund.
Yeah.
That would be, yes, about $1.5 million.
So, and you have told me before that that is only good for single-shot projects, not for ongoing expenses.
That's correct.
Okay. So I would suggest that even if the PEG money can't be used for this, and I'm beginning to wonder and doubt that it could be, but we could leave that up to staff to determine after we gave them our okay, that there is money for this when you've got $1.5 million for one-time projects. The other thing I would say, too, is that I didn't vote for Civic Plus. Susan started that voting. When we got these proposals, we got several of them. We began by just cutting out the really low ones and the really high ones, and they did go up to like over $100,000 to do this. And I think one of the things I was concerned about with Civic Plus was this Discover meeting. If you look at this chart about under comments, that there's a Discover meeting that's almost $5,000 extra. So when we look at $23,000 for this, we're actually looking at something close to $30,000, really, when we add on these other costs, the discovery meeting and such.
Well, the other costs are items that we can pick up as options.
Even the discovery meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
And the discovery meeting was one that if they were to come out and want to do more, you know, more in-depth questioning and spend more time and, you know, actually do question and answer periods with, you know, key members, that would wind up costing more money.
And then the other thing I think I would wonder about right now, too, is that if we okay this and we approve Civic Plus and go forward, how will they check the design and the content of the new site they propose? Won't they send it back to us and ask us to take a look at it as a test of the website to see if we like what it looks like, what's on it.
That was my understanding.
I see. On page 3 of 8, do you have that report with you in front of you there? If you add up those numbers,
it would be Janine's grid, 3 of 8. These are all optional costs, by the way.
Well, then how did we come up with 23,000? If you add up all these numbers, it's a lot more than 23,000. So I'm just wondering, how did we come up with the 23? What did we delete? And also, the third one from the bottom where it talks about $8,200 one-time fee for 2 days additional training and consulting 3 months after go-live. Are they talking about training for what, one person, three people, five people?
Now, these were all optional add-on features. So everything that you see there is just something that we can get if we need it. But their base price, just to do the website redesign, present it to us, was the $23,000.
Okay, so nothing on here is included in that $23,000?
No.
What is included in the $23,000 is on page 1 of 8, and I would suggest, too, that should we approve this project and go forward with Civic Plus, we might look at not having some of these things, like notify me email subscription and opinion polls and things I don't even know what they are. I mean, all I ever wanted was to have a better design that was more accessible to residents with a search bar and a sitemap. And I think that staff, you've already recognized that some of these things we might ask Civic Plus to not do at this time.
That's correct.
Which might even provide a slightly lower cost.
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, I have a couple of questions, if I may. Is this site, how do I say this? Is this website, the software to get in and out of it and everything, proprietary? I mean, is this something that someone's going to sit down at a computer and just do when we want to make changes? And then secondly, and probably as part of that, what is the annual maintenance fees we're going to be paying for this?
The software will be something that's given to us, and so we will be able to give that to our website host, John Gemma, who does host our website for free right now. We would give the, and that's the document management software. We would be able to manage that ourselves, or we would give it to John. John would do the management of it, the maintenance on it. The annual maintenance with Civic Plus would only come into play if we chose to have Civic Plus host the site, which we're not doing.
So there's no annual licensing fee or anything like that?
No.
Because I'm a little in the dark on this, because I had a very, very minor part in the role of setting up, obviously, a very inferior website for Neighborhood Watch, and it was like, including the software and the whole enchilada, we were less than $500. And admittedly, it was all done by volunteer labor, and it's not anywhere near the 100 pages of website this would be, but I'm just having a hard time getting up to $23,000 for this.
$3,000. But they've defined it better, and that's the only way I can, you know, really describe it to you. I'm kind of clueless on a lot of this myself, not being an IT tech type person. But Civic Plus gave us the website redesign, 100 pages worth of information. They had quite a list of things that they would provide us with for the $23,000, whereas Teradyne just said everything in your RFP you get for $15,000. So theirs was not very clear, mm-hmm. And we felt that we weren't comfortable with that. We sent out another set of questions, asked them, what exactly do you mean by this? And they came back with the same response. All of the things that you listed in your RFP, we will do for this base price. So
Teradon was, from a cheaper point of view, they were the less expensive option. What we found with Teradon was the websites that they directed us to were not municipal websites. They were more private corporations. So we felt a little bit better, or the committee members, I was not a part of the committee. The committee members felt that, for the most part, felt that Civic Plus did have more municipal experience.
And the difference with American Eagle, can you comment on them?
I'd like to throw that question to Councilmember DeMeritt because she was on the committee.
And Susan attended most of them, but I think she got kidnapped by a jury or something. I never considered American Eagle. You know, once you're getting up to 27,000, as you may recall, I generated this through a student report, and the students themselves decided, don't let students do this because, one, it won't be that hot. Two, it'll take a long, long time, and it won't be guaranteed because the students will graduate and move on. So we came back to looking for a professional one. I was pulling for Teradon, but it was 3-1 for Civic Plus. And the main reason I recall was their great experience, Civic Plus's great experience with Civic Sites. And if you go to their website, that's all they do. They do cities.
And there weren't any civic sites that Teradon had done?
You know, I don't recall. I think they were insurance companies, medical insurance or something like that they mainly did.
Okay. Yes, Rick.
Susan, referring back to 1 of 8 again, second paragraph, talks about e-commerce functionality, paying water bills, permit fees, and all this. And I think we just spent $278,000 on a new software for the city that's going to be streamlining and making it a lot easier for us to do these kind of things. Was there thought put in or dialogue presented that would show the interaction of each compared to each other? Was there any?
All right. Comments? Betty, you want to start?
Yes, I'm a little concerned about the price. I really thought we were going to be doing this for $5,000 to $10,000. But I understand the great need to have an accessible website, a usable website. And if this is the going rate, and this is the company that does government sites, I guess I'm willing to do that unless there's a good argument for Teradon, which would save us $8,000.
Bill?
Obviously, I'm suffering from sticker shock. I have no, you know, I have no knowledge of any of these companies, and I have to take the committee's word that Civic Plus is the way to go, but that's an awful lot of money for a website to me, but that's because I'm not in that business.
Rick?
Well, I'd still like to pursue the PEG access fee, see if there's any way that we can utilize that, since it is a municipality website. It is a government website. We might be able to squeeze that in. But when we talked about funds are available in the general fund for PEG, are we talking 100% of that $23,000?
Yes. We have 50 or 60,000 of PEG fees in the general fund.
Can I ask a question here? Mm-hmm. Because of the number of people who now have satellite instead of cable in this area, I'm going to guess that probably only about half of the people in Morro Bay can even see these council meetings, which was one of the reasons why we've been talking about streaming the meetings. And a concern I have is, if what are we going to fund that from if we use this money for a website? Because it's going to take some pretty heavy-duty computer stuff, and I'm sure there's going to be bandwidth issues and costs. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a question I'm throwing out to see how this works. That, to me, would be more appropriate for PEG access funds.
Well, I guess I've got a question there on funding. The city council usually has an account, and I don't think we've used much of it. Do you have any idea how much is in that?
In your account for?
There's just an allocation for city council expenses, travel, and things like that. I don't think we've used any of it this year.
We did use some $5,000 for something. What was that?
Yeah, right, Santa Barbara.
Okay. Yeah, that's what it was.
Santa Barbara.
Oh, right.
So there has been some used.
And we have another workshop coming up.
I don't remember how much it was.
Is this a time-sensitive issue that we have to decide this tonight, or can we get some information like PEG access and some of those things? I'd be just as happy delaying this meeting until we get something definitive on whether or not you can use a PEG access funds and find out if there's any other funding sources out there.
Well,
All right, we were going down this way. Melody.
I would urge that we go ahead.
That we would encourage staff to look for other sources of money or to explore this issue of PEG access money or not. I'd like to move forward with the concept regardless. I think the question then becomes, where does the money come from?
And I'd accept that amendment. That they would explore other funding sources.
Could we, just for rules of order, when a motion's made, you can't. You second and then you do an amendment to it.
You have to at the same time?
Yeah, no, I'll second it if you do it. So if we could just have the motion again for Bridget, that would really help, I'm sure.
Thank you, Rob. I move approval of D1 to direct staff to work with Civic Plus and also to direct staff to work with Civic Plus to reduce costs on this project and to take a look at PEG access fees as an alternative funding source. And the legality of that.
I second that.
Okay. Discussion. Rick.
I don't think it's going to hurt anybody if we wait a couple of weeks to do this or not. We have one in place. Granted, it's not state of the art, but it's there. I agree with Bill that I would like to see, I'd be much more agreeable to going with this if we were able to use the PEG access funds. So I'd like to get an idea if we can do that or not. And like I say, I don't think it's going to hurt anybody until we find out.
Well, I guess the question would be that if we can't, then you don't want to do it?
If we can't, then I might not go with Civic Plus. I might look at the little less expensive option on here.
Okay, Bill, any comments?
I just want to know whether or not, I mean, to me, PEG access funds for this are not appropriate, but I'd like to have something definitive at this point, because I've always, we've been involved in negotiations with the cable company and everything when it was Sonic, and we had to pry their fingers off of money to set up these cameras in the back room, and it was a tough fight. And I'm just not sure that this is where we should be heading with this. If there's another funding source, fine, but I'd kind of like to know about the PEG access issue.
Well, I guess I would have a question, too. If it's not PEG access, because that's what you brought forward, where do we have money that we could spend for this?
Well, we do have general fund money. We have cash in the general fund that we could use. Mm-hmm. We also have some of our, discretion or accumulation fund that we could use some of that for this. We've also got our money that we have that's we had gotten the insurance refund, and that would be a perfect example of a one-time project that we could use that for as well.
I thought that went into our insurance.
It did, but it could be used for this. It is, the insurance fund is discretionary money.
Okay.
Excuse me, but we're talking about a motion on the floor, and I would just point out that if you examine these documents back here, you'll see that Civic Plus has already.
I've just got concerns about replacing something that at least is there, even though it's not terribly wonderful and functional.
before we look at our budget.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I would suggest that it may be there, but it's not useful. If you go to try to find a certain item, I can't remember what I was looking for the other night, but you can't find it. And that's the whole point, I think, of why we decided as a group to go after this was because people can't access information currently on it. You can get some very basic phone numbers and addresses and a few documents, but it's nothing near what we need. And I think this is one of those times that it is important to... This is a one-time money that's going to be useful for many years. And it's a one-time money that really reaches everyone that has a computer in our city. And it's one-time money that makes us accessible to our public. And so I think this is the very poster child project that we need to spend money on that reaches lots of people and it comes back to us manyfold.
Madam Mayor.
Right.
Yes, Andrea.
If I may interrupt, it might be helpful for the council. I can see that you're having trouble with this decision. Certainly know that we are coming back with our budget hearing on May 8th. I know it's a little bit of a push backwards, but you might feel more comfortable dealing with it at that time. I would strongly suggest that Civic Plus, it would be worthwhile. And if you decide to hold back on your decision tonight to take a look at the documents, because they do excellent work, especially for municipalities. So perhaps a bit of a delay, but we certainly are going to our budget hearing on May 8th.
And you'd also know for certain whether it can be used for PEG.
Right.
I mean, the issue I have is, although it's supposed to be used for your cable subscribers, certainly the use of the public television and the public access to put on a show, you don't have to be a subscriber to go in and use it and be part of the station. So I don't think it has to be – the use does not have to be just for subscribers of the cable. But, I mean, there are issues that I just have not delved into, and that's something we could let you know at your budget hearing where that $20,000 would be coming from if you want to wait. Or if you do want to go forward, you can, and we'll just make that determination on – whether it can be used for PEG would be our first. If it can legally be done, we will. If not, then it would be up to Susan where it would come from.
Rick, did you have another comment?
Well, thanks, Rob. That's pretty much what I was going to say. let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's find out how we're going to pay for this. Maybe it's not appropriate. I hope it is appropriate. I hope it is deemed that it's appropriate, so we can use that. And we would still have... over $20,000 left in that particular fund for that purpose for streaming, but yeah, it's not going to hurt to wait a week or 9 days until we have our budget hearings and we have a little more information. I suggest that's where we go with this.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. And the motion. Let's review the motion. Bridget, what was the motion again?
I could do it, Bridget.
And direct staff to work with Civic Plus to reduce costs.
Okay, moving on. This one, item D2, discussion on low-income assistance on water and wastewater treatment user rates. Susan, you again.
Good evening again. At Council's direction, staff explored the concept of providing assistance to low-income sewer and water utility ratepayers. Two ideas were proposed, a discount and/or a voluntary donation bank. In order to offer a discount, much like PG&E offers, the value of the discount would have to be subsidized by the general fund. Legislature, namely Proposition 218, requires that property-related fees be charged equitably to all ratepayers. Any discounts must be made up with discretionary or general government funds. Unfortunately, the general fund is not capable of funding a subsidy as it is financially struggling to support its current load of activities. The alternative proposed is a voluntary donation bank. Staff seriously examined this idea and feels that the lack of consistency with the dollar amount available and to allocate creates a significant problem for utility billing. Bills would have to be adjusted manually each month, depending on the number of eligible participants and the value of the bank. Staff feels that the idea of a donation bank, while admirable, is not feasible. Staff is asking council to provide further direction.
Okay, questions? I have one on the second page of your report, number two, about additional staff time and the barcode. There's no way that we could add a barcode for this secondary use so that it would be automatic?
No, we wouldn't have the ability to do it because we wouldn't know. We wouldn't know the amount of money that we would have available. And so to add the barcode, we would have to go through and create the discount. The discount would then, and that was more related to the voluntary donations. Right. That's where the problem would come in because we wouldn't know what they were.
Inconsistent. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Other questions?
Yeah.
Rick?
So the way people initially would get on this program for the savings was to submit verification of a care card through PG&E Utilities that showed that they qualified for PG&E. So if they qualified for PG&E, then we would just say okay.
That's correct.
Now, isn't it correct that once you get that care qualification, it's never checked on again whether your situation changes?
Annually. Annually, it's checked on.
I use
CARE for my utilities, and annually they check up on. They ask you to resubmit.
Okay, and there's other ways that people can qualify by showing like a Medi-Cal.
Water only, and there were discounts provided to people 20% or up to $10 of their water bill.
Right.
That was based on if the customer came in and said, I am a participant or I'm eligible for PG&E's care program, we were allowing this discount to go forward. Once I came on board, I stopped it because I knew that it was not a fair and equitable method of charging people. So the people that were already on the program, we left them there and waited for their status to change. Either they moved or something triggered us to realize that they were no longer qualifying.
Okay, and further then, if there were a bank like we're talking about here, and people put money into a bank, and let's say just off the cuff, say there's $50,000 in a bank. So what other problems do you see when that bank depletes and then all of a sudden we say to the people, okay, well, you don't qualify anymore because there's no money left in the bank. That's one problem that I see happening. Plus, it seems like we would have to hire another person just for this particular thing. What other problems do you see personnel-wise and time-wise?
That was probably the biggest challenge was, of course, there would be the initial accepting the applications, getting people processed through, which would be a huge stress for staff time-wise and work-wise. But it would just be a one-time initial glut of applications, and then things would, kind of smooth out and people would apply here and there. The other problems that we saw were if we have a donation bank and we say that people are going to get a 10% discount, let's say, and we have the bank over here. We set the people up that have qualified. They get their 10% discount. We draw, and all of a sudden we say, okay, we've run out of money. You're back paying your full bore. So it's kind of like you've offered them something, and then you're going to rip it away without them having any real notification. we honestly didn't feel that it was fair. And that was the one, that was the other thing that we were worried about, was how fair is that to tell a customer who qualifies for PG&E that your discount is only based on this pot of money over here that we have, and if it runs out, that's it.
Other questions?
My only question is, this is the program we're looking at tonight, but what we've discussed in the past is reducing the number of units that we charge for the lowest amount of money. Now, is that not part of this program, or is that another, not program, but is that another strategy that we're looking at later? Because I thought that was something that was coming back to us.
It was something that that didn't work. It didn't balance out. You wouldn't make enough by charging just the bigger users to make up for what you lose on the small ones. There's just too many of them. And you'd be giving an advantage to people who didn't live here.
I guess my comment was just a little different than that, not using the others to offset this program, but outside of this program, were we not at some point going to talk about reducing units?
That's what I was talking about. Not this program, not the voluntary one, just the reducing units.
But when do we get to talk about that?
Well, it didn't work. That's the problem. That's why it didn't come forward as a possibility, because there's no way to do it and make up the difference. You lose so much. If you reduce the amount, or even if you just don't increase the amount to the people who only use one unit or zero units, which some people do, it comes out zero, you don't make enough to finance what we need to finance.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I would point out that people who use one or two units basically are costing us money.
Right.
Because it costs about $38 a household to have you hooked up to a water meter, whether you turn the faucet on or not. So it's great to say we've got to help these people with one or two units, and that's great. I have no problem with that. But what we're doing is subsidizing them out of the water fund, because it costs about $38 a household to provide water service.
Is that because of personnel costs?
That's because of everything.
Maintenance?
That's everything.
How is it that you all know this information and we don't?
I asked a question once.
Okay. Well, I guess I'd like to have that information shared either now, you know, at this topic, or it needs to come back so we all have that information.
Well, we talked about it when we talked about having to raise the sewer rates.
But I don't remember us having that kind of data that said, yes, it's this way, or yes, it's this way. I don't think I missed that.
How many people use the lower rates? No, we probably didn't. I don't know if we had that or not. But it's something that, you know, I thought might work. It didn't work. And then you look at what Susan, I asked her today. I said, you know, because I was trying to figure, okay, if we did go to offering a discount from the city, how many people would we have to offer it to? And my gosh, it says about 43% of our ratepayers would be eligible for the discount.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
But so, we weren't going to change water rates. We were going to change sewer rates based on water usage.
Right.
So did you transfer that information to the sewer rates as opposed to the water rates? Or were you only talking water?
Well, it was a way to perhaps balance it by going to water. The sewer rates have to go up.
But
they
we had talked about
to pay for what we
but
need
we had
to
talked
do.
About making it graduated. So those who use less would have less to pay on the new rate in the sewer. That was my understanding. Now, maybe I misunderstood, but I thought that's where we were headed. We have a water fund. We have a sewer fund. Mm-hmm. It's the sewer rates that are going up, and that we were going to look at seeing if we could step that down for lower users.
And it doesn't work.
If I may interrupt, when I worked with Mayor Peters on this, we at first were examining things based on water, and so we realized that we needed to move it into a sewer in order to do the wastewater treatment plant upgrade. It was not going to provide us with the capital that we need by doing the discounting. So that's when we started looking more into the donation bank or something that would still pull the revenue in, but would give the offset to the people who have, you know, are low income qualified. and we just couldn't make it work.
I understand that. I wish that that information could be shared.
Well, and that could be a future agenda item if you'd like to schedule for that. But for tonight, it's the financial. That's what's in front of you, the financial assistance for low-income water sewer rates. If you want to look at lower rates and for the smaller units, that's a discussion really where you need to have your water and sewer guys here, Bill and Dylan, so that they can tell you exactly what those ramifications would be.
Rick?
My question is, why are 60 people getting a break when there's people that are worse off than them that are not getting a break? That's not fair. It's inherently not fair. I submit that we really can't continue with this. There's no enforcement, so to speak. There's no verification going on. To do so would put us in a hell of a mess. It would cost us a lot of money. And these 60 ratepayers have been getting a nice little ride, be it not that much. Okay, it's really not a lot of money. But they've been getting a little break here for a lot of number of years. So, you know, I'm for putting a kibosh on this whole thing. I don't want to just say it's the easiest thing to do. It's the fairest thing to do.
Does that raise a legal question with people who've been getting that rate and stopping it?
I don't know. I do know that it's not on our agenda for tonight.
Okay.
So okay. If you'd like that, we could look at it and see what those – I think we certainly can end it. I mean, I do have the issue of When you through the CARES, you have to submit that you're eligible for it for each year, but there's no mechanism for the city checking that, whether they have continued with CARES or are not on that any longer. So there might be some internal issues. We have to make certain that they do still qualify for it. But as far as ending it, that would be a future agenda item.
Melody?
Thank you. I think what was just suggested is taking 60 people out of 10,000 people who have these rates. I'm not interested in that, but I would like to future agendize a good discussion. I've been reluctant to discuss this water usage factor because it isn't on the agenda, and I want to have a good discussion of it with access to all the information because I think it's being misconstrued. So if I could future agendize that and get any support for that.
I just want to be clear, because then when water fees come back, it's just water rates you want to look at.
And the way we set them and the scales we set them at, because that isn't tonight, but it's a useful to sewer 1 to 10. So on your sewer rates, it actually doesn't change. So for those of you who are talking about making money for the wastewater treatment plant, you might actually be missing out on something. But I just think it's been morphed from what I was talking about. I never wanted to go down on 1 to 2 users or 1 to 3. I just think it would be useful to have a clear discussion of it. I'm reluctant to talk about it tonight because I don't have the information in front of me.
I think it's just a general discussion of our water and sewer rates and the calculations we use in the metric units of each. Is what you're looking for.
The effect of it.
I'll support bringing that back.
I will too. But in terms of tonight's item, it sounds like there's
two,
nothing to do.
That's two. Do we have a third person
yes.
that wants that discussion brought back? Three, okay.
So in terms of this, you're saying that there's nothing to do with it and to move on?
Well, as far as that idea, it doesn't seem to be practical
okay.
now. But I would say that, this whole discussion came out of the fact that we did raise the sewer rates. We raised the sewer rates because we went from secondary to tertiary. We went for additional composting. The impact on the project was $3 million extra, and we were trying to find ways to not have that reflected in the ratepayers, and there's just no way to do it. So,
well, and I would augment that by saying it's also raised because we wanted to work on infrastructure. It's not just the plant. I think it's important to make sure it's about all of the parts.
Well, absolutely. That's made it more expensive.
That's the whole point. So, all right. So we don't need any kind of a motion on that then. Thank you, Susan. Sorry. Okay. D3. Discussion of facilitator for the June 30th, 2008 goal setting and strategic planning workshop.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. This is a document or a staff report that you asked to bring back. We provided you some months ago a single proposal for a planning workshop, a goal setting workshop, as was brought up initially when the council went on a retreat and talked about the importance of goal setting and some long-term planning. We initially had one proposal for management partners. We went back out and sent out approximately eight RFPs to different groups, identified through a couple of different avenues. One was a listserv that we got from the League of California Cities on groups that did this kind of work. The other was just questions to the surrounding city managers on who they've used in the past for goal setting and workshops. We sent out eight. We got four back. Basically, we did a very brief RFP. We went to the Rob Schultz School of RFP Writing and did a one-page, and it came back with four results. And basically what we're looking for is the suggested workshop format would begin with interviews of the city council members, the department heads, the city manager, and the city attorney. Then we would follow with a workshop that would be held all day 9 to 4, talking about goal setting and planning. Again, I would remind you that the workshop format would be open to the public. It would be workshop, though, so there would be no public comment, and it would be a study session for the city council and department. The proposal is from Communication Training Dynamics, and the proposal from that company is $4,300. It's important to note that we can pay for this workshop in the existing 2007-2008 city manager budget. We've been fairly frugal this year and have some funding left, so anywhere from $43,000 to $10,000 we can cover in the budget this fiscal year.
Can you cover $23,000? I'm going back to my previous
perhaps list. A portion of that, but I'm very comfortable covering $43,000 to $10,000. With that, I'm happy to answer questions and ask that you decide on a facilitator so we can begin that planning.
Okay. Any questions?
Comments? I have a question, actually. We had a facilitator at an event in Shell Beach or Pismo Beach. I guess it was Pismo. Almost, 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Is that one of these people? Well, I'm looking at the last one, the Communication Training Dynamics. I'm wondering if that was the gentleman we used.
Was I there?
Yes, you were.
I was not there.
You were not there. Well, that was a woman. Was it? Well, it might have been.
It was not Dr. Foss.
Okay. Well, that answers that. Now you have a comment.
Okay, Betty.
You're ready for comments.
Sure.
This has taken a different life than I had envisioned back in November. I was, and we can still do a facilitator, but my direction, my thought, my vision of what was going to happen was that we were going to finally set long-term goals. I wasn't interested in short-term goals. I wanted to say, where does this council want to be, you know, in 5 years and 4 years and 3 years, and back it up that direction, but I wanted something out here that I could work for. The other thing was I assumed that we would be out of town, and though it's a public meeting. And so that's another little disagreement I had in my head. And I think those were the two major ones. And I wasn't interested in finances. I was interested in the intangible. You know, what is it for the city? Where do we see we need to be? And that may end up talking about finances to get there ultimately. But I wasn't into concrete. So I was into nebulous.
Bill?
Ask.
Rick.
Here comes Rob. I talked to Rob earlier about, just because you spend $10,000 on a facilitator certainly doesn't guarantee you're going to have an effective session or an effective facilitator. And we're talking about short-term goals. Well, we're also talking about our short and long-term priorities. And I guess I'm the only one that feels this way. I don't know, but I don't see why Rob Schultz can't be our facilitator. I think Rob Schultz is very well abreast of what the priorities are in this city. Not that we're going to, I think he can give us what we need to get us going. And he's agreed to do that. When we spoke informally about this, you did. I got it on tape.
I think I might have been misinterpreted. What I said was is, and I reiterated what was said. And Councilmember Winholtz, that might be a little bit different, though. But I think some of those issues that you talk about are part of this. But I think it was more important to get those two-year goals down that you're going to be meeting is what we talked about in the November. So this was envisioned, what they were talking about was this type of goal setting short term, but certainly can discuss long-term visions also. But they do, going to your other question, they do have to be within the city because they are a Brown Act meeting, and because you'll be discussing city goals, whether it's long-term or short-term, the meeting needs to be held within the city of Morro Bay.
Melody?
Yeah, I was at the meeting. We all went off on some retreat in Santa Barbara, and we heard people talking about this. And I thought that what we had agreed to do was to do some long-term priority setting and goal setting. So when I was looking around at the different city websites, I think it was last night, I was kind of looking at this and that. I looked at the city of Pismo. They've got this short little list about this long. They've got their short-term goals, which, of course, include parking meters, midterm, and then long-term. I don't think they had to go to this big, long process to do all of this and pay somebody $10,000 to figure out what they already knew, probably. I think that when we talk about a strategic planning workshop for the upcoming fiscal year and have it begin with an interview, as it does here, I think we're going to get something similar to what we might have gotten about a year ago when we were looking at priorities. And I think that what we need to do is to skip the interviews, revise it from the upcoming fiscal year to the next five, and we need to sit in a big room and workshop with our department heads and the public if they'd like to come and listen to us hit ourselves over the head and do it that way. I don't know if that means that we have to send out another short RFP or not. Good. Or that we can just simply change the terms of it so that we look. And, I mean, Councilmember Pierce, you were pretty frustrated. I remember about a year ago you said to me, we've never had a five-year goal. We've never set them, you know. And I think we need to do some long-range planning, especially in light of a new city manager, the management partners review coming in. Okay, given all that, where are we going over 5 years?
I think the mistake we made when we did do a priorities thing, and I don't know if you were on the council at that point or not, we had a facilitator, and we sat down with all the little pieces of paper glued all over the walls and the little gummed labels, and the fatal flaw to that whole thing is that we didn't separate reality from dream world, and our number one priority basically was something that we're not capable. Well, it was like undergrounding all the utilities. Cool. That's a good goal at some point down the road. But the next question is, in what timeline do you see that happening? We didn't get there. So then the next time we try that at a budget session, I think we're less pie in the sky, but it was not long-term planning. It was like, what do you see for next budget? And so you're right. I have said that. I still feel that way. We need to sit down and get some realistic, you know, two-year goals. That's a budget. 5 year, 10 year, where is this city going to be and how are we going to get it there and that kind of stuff. And I agree, we need to do that, but I'm not sure how best to do that. I think we do need a facilitator, but
otherwise you're right. We get stuck in the same rut. We need somebody to get us out of our way of thinking and broaden our horizons. And the only way you're going to do that is with somebody who isn't already involved to the extent that all of us are, and Rob would be too, in what we are. And we need somebody that's going to direct our dreams and our hopes and our goals in a practical way that we might not be able to see because we're just simply too close.
Just a question. Ms. Luker, were there references that we could call to see how other cities responded to these people?
I think on most of the proposals there are other cities that they've worked with.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I looked at those lists, too. Management Partners Santa Cruz and Gilroy are the two that I looked at specifically, thinking they would be, you know, kind of comparable.
I think I'd like to call and find out if they had a positive or negative reaction to that, and because I'm not sure that using Management Partners will necessarily give us the same people that have been doing our study, because they're such a huge firm.
But they would have access to all
of that. Well, they would have access to that through us as well, though. So I guess I'd like to see what cities responded positively to which of these groups.
Rick?
Just another comment. Management Partners, well over $200 an hour for 30 hours of work. I mean, 30 times 200 is 6,000. So it's, I don't have the exact math, but it's got to be about $225 an hour.
230. I just did the math.
$230 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Madam Mayor.
If I may, yeah. To Mamie, the first issue I think is to decide whether you want a facilitator. And then the second is how much do you want to pay for that facilitator? And then staff would negotiate that within that parameters. I mean, if the parameters is 1,000, they'll be here just for a couple of hours. They won't reduce their hourly rate, but they certainly would reduce the interview process, maybe the follow-up report and other items. So I think that would be, I think, the best way to address
these
issues.
Another reason I would say use Management Partners, because they wouldn't have to go through a lot of the interview if they use what they've already got. Go ahead, Melody.
Yes, I would suggest it's slightly different than what Mr. Schultz said. I think we have to decide whether or not we think the interview part is worthwhile, or do we want to just head right into a workshop. Also, we have to decide whether it's 1 year, or shall we go to something like short, mid, and long-term goals. And then, thirdly, I think we have to decide on the facilitator that we would want. And I think, having gone through a session at Cal Poly with all kinds of people there and stickies on the wall, that I saw what a facilitator does. She did not have a clue about the subject we were talking about, but she kept us on schedule, she moved us through the topics, and she kept us from screaming at each other.
Other comments?
Well, I'm ready to make a proposal.
All right.
That we do hire a facilitator, that we look at short as well as at least midterm to long, I would say at least 5-year goals that we need to go out that far. And that I don't want to shorten the day, but I don't want to spend so much money. But if we've got the money to spend, it fits into that.
Okay. Bill?
Was that a motion?
Yeah, I think it was a motion.
Okay.
Oh,
will
you second
Bridget
that? Thinks it was a motion.
The motion was to go to hire a facilitator, to make the choice of facilitator contingent upon Ms. Luker interviewing some cities, and that we look at least 5-year goals, and maybe
stop there, and I'll second it.
Right on.
Okay.
And I'm willing to ditch pre-interviews. But I don't know how that fits into the cycle of the
well,
work.
Well, I think I'd like to talk to that. I think what I would suggest is that staff contact Management Partners and say, you know, you guys have got all of this stuff. Can't we get some benefit out of it without coming down and doing it all over again, re-interviewing us? And if we can get them to shave a little off the price because they don't need to do the interviews, we're all still the same people. I would think they have their fingers on the pulse. You know, they've talked to all the staff. They've talked to all of us. And so I would suggest we start with them to see if they're comfortable doing what they feel they can do without having to come in and do the interviews. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, that would be my suggestion. It doesn't have to be part of the motion. I think we're good on the motion.
I'm just not sure that the questions they asked us initially would be the same questions they would ask us now.
Okay.
Well, that's a good point.
Any more
point.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Next. Reopening discussion on a North Main Street bike lane.
Do you want me to take this?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. It is you. Yes.
This is to consider the feasibility of previously designed bike lane on North Main Street, and as a result of the discussion, that hopefully that will take some action to stripe some lanes on North Main Street. What is attached here is when this first came before council back in 2003. It actually came before council three times that year. The first time was to be able to access a grant that only came because it involved bike lanes. Council said we didn't want to do that, so we turned down that money, but we were interested in talking about bike lanes. And so it came back again, and that's what the next discussion's kind of about. And these are people on that list that came and talked at the second hearing that, I guess I didn't include that one. There's about 12 people that came and talked at that time when we were ready to say no. They said, yeah, you need to do this. So we sent it over to the Public Works Advisory Board, and they came back with a recommendation, which is the pictures that Mr. Boucher designed for us. And if I'm doing of this history incorrectly, Mr. Livick has the true history. Talked about how it was, if you see the next to the last page, printed page before the pictures, it talks about how he had gone through block at a time and showed how this could have worked. And at that time, again, council decided not to do that. In light of the discussion of unmet needs earlier this year in February from our bike committee, I thought it was time to bring it back. And fortunately, Mr. Boucher still had his diagrams. And their
first proposal was to strip parking and stripe bike lanes out there. And that didn't go over well with some of the businesses along North Main. The second proposal to install these, what Mr. Boucher refers to as bulb ins rather than bulb outs,
because we're
taking away widening out the street. That was something that we were looking into, and we've implemented with development projects. SunCal Roofing has one in front of their property that moves the curb line closer to the property line, narrows up the sidewalk a little bit, provides parking, and gives us sufficient width to stripe it for bike lanes, although we haven't striped it yet because we need a continuous route along there. Problem is, you know, development happens slowly over time, redevelopment happens slowly over time, and it may be a while before would be able to condition all the properties along there to install these bulb ins. I believe in 4 years ago, the estimated cost for this was about $13,000. I haven't prepared a cost estimate for that, but based on recent concrete work that I've had done to repair some sidewalks due to tree damage, I think that's very low. I would guess that it's four or five times more than that in current day dollars. But it's something that we could bring back to you as a prepare a preliminary cost estimate for these bulb ins, or to continue to pursue the path that we're on right now, and as properties develop and redevelop, to condition them to make those improvements. With that, try to answer any more questions.
I actually have one question. My memory was, and I thought by seeing these pictures, that we could actually go ahead and stripe in a large, if not the whole length of that area, up to not San Jacinto, but up to San Joaquin, because one of the concerns was in front of Lolo's, which was between San Joaquin and San Jacinto. But if we even got as far as San Joaquin, I thought we were able to do that even without the bulb ins.
I don't know what the exact pavement width is out there right now, but we can check into that and see if we can stripe it for bike lanes. And if we can stripe it for bike lanes, we would still need to go out to bid and have contractors bid on that striping. Depending on what those costs are, would determine whether we'd have to come back and get authorization to do that work and whether we have sufficient funds to do that. Some of the issues that we may run into on these bulb ins are calling for a 5-foot sidewalk minimum. I know the new proposed ADA right-of-way guidelines, we're probably going to want something along 5 feet, not including the curb face. Otherwise, you have to have passing refuges for pedestrians in your sidewalk.
Reduced to 11 feet. What's the width on most of that currently before reduction?
The total width of the whole pavement?
Well,
or the,
you're saying 11 feet, that's one way.
I think the existing travel lanes are generally striped at 13-foot travel lanes.
I think what's not on the report is how. What's the percentage that it's that?
I'm not sure what that is. I'd have to come back to you and determine. You know, actually do some cross sections out there to determine where the widths are deficient. As Councilmember Winholz pointed out, there may be large sections that can be striped and meet these deficiencies. And
well,
still
it does
get
vary
in there
a lot. When you,
yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I think if we look at the back of the staff report at Mr. Boucher's drawings, it looks like the Main Street San Jacinto to Elena area is something that we could possibly do some striping in an area like that where we've got 10-foot sidewalks on his proposed short-term idea. And at the same time, I'd also like to congratulate the business SynCal for their incredible remodel job that gave us that bulb bit opportunity there and a beautiful building besides. But I think back here we see that there are some places we could actually have bike lanes on both sides and still have quite legal sidewalks, especially that proposed short term.
All right, so what we're looking at is whether we want to proceed with this. Obviously, if we do, we're going to have to get some new cost estimates and find out from those businesses how they feel about this now. And I would suggest it would come back as a public hearing.
And I'd like to have you pursue a SLOCOG funding because they have money strictly for bikes. Mm-hmm. Or bike-friendly type roads, and whether or not they've got any money in that pot, they may or may not.
Yeah.
There might be some through other sources as well.
Maybe through the APCD?
We'd have to get cost estimates.
Moyer and Mover funds, but I don't know what the time cycle is on those.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we'd need the cost estimates first so that we know what we're looking at.
Right.
Yes, Rick.
When you bicycle stripe a street, is it a law that it has to be the entire street, not interrupted?
We could post it start and stop bike lane. We would have to start a bike lane, then stop a bike lane where it's striped. There are other strategies that other agencies use and not call it a bike lane. They put a white stripe along there, an edge line stripe, not call it a bike line. Everybody knows it's supposed to be a bike lane, but we don't call it a bike lane. It's an edge line stripe.
All right. So do we have Betty, you want to make a motion?
Sure. I'll make a motion that we ask staff to pursue this idea of financial and engineering ideas and anything else they think is appropriate that we need to know to come back with to talk about putting in a North Main Street bike lane. Under any name.
Early tonight. Okay, and the closing comment tonight, Betty?
The little comment tonight is, everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves. Carl Jung.
And with that, we're adjourned.